in my dead. Little souvenirs and secrets shared. Little off guard and unprepared.
Say You'll Haunt Me from Stone Sour. That's the number one song in rock for the third straight week in a row. We'll see you next week on the Sideshow Countdown, where we're going to have more of the biggest songs in rock and handpicked tracks by me. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Say you want a revolution. Well, you know. Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast, and I am sitting all alone in this air studio, all by myself, Julene Jordan. Well, we'll see whether she's out for the evening or not. She flew to Los Angeles on Friday to be there for the opening of Jackass 3D. I mean, folks, I don't know what to tell you, but she did. That is, and it's in 3D. This is, these guys do these crazy stunts. A lot of you know what it is. Some of you don't. And I don't even know what to say. But she was hoping to get back in time for the program. But I told her, you know, it's a five-hour flight. There's a three-hour difference. So it's kind of like stretches into 8 hours. So she says she's going to try to call the show around midnight. That's in an hour here, Eastern Time. Well, so it's me and Stephanie, and you can reach me through Stephanie at 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. I've already been talking and talking and talking since about 5 o'clock. I hosted a benefit concert tonight down at a nice little venue south of Wayne State University called Trumbullplex. David Rovix played, and a band called Joe Yon. Suddenly, that doesn't sound right. I said it right when I introduced him. But you can go to David Rovix, ROVICS.com. A singer-songwriter, sort of in the mold of Phil Oakes from the 1960s and Bob Dylan when he was acoustic and all that. So singer-songwriter, good stuff. You can reach me at 313-298-WRIF. It is a phone-in talk show, so it's you and me tonight. Or unless Jalene shows up, I hope she does. 313-298-9743. If you'd like to email me, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We are on Facebook, and that is just Facebook/Night Call. And friends want it. Check it out. Stephanie, besides answering the phones, does a wonderful job of preparing our podcast. It's available by noon on Monday. So welcome to the broadcast. And, you know, here, usually I don't read emails right off the bat, but this brings up a subject we've talked about in the past. Some of you have been around for a long time listening to the program, so you may remember these conversations. But here, this is from Daywan Ron. He writes in the calltalkyes@yahoo.com. 11 p.m. Sunday nights can't come soon enough for me. My whole entire family is deeply religious and very vocal about it. Also, they are intolerant of anything they don't want to believe. That includes factual history, science, well, reality in general. That means that I pretty much cannot talk about anything with my family outside of the weather or listening to them talk about what they read about President Obama being a homosexual Muslim who is cheating on his wife in between AA meetings. So Daywan Ron says, so you guys, meaning me and Jalene, and my weekly dose of sanity. I love you guys. It would probably go insane if you went off the air. I don't really have anything relevant to say this time, but I just wanted to voice my appreciation for you. Thanks for being on the air. Well, Ron, we certainly appreciate that, speaking on behalf of myself and Jolene, but careful not to put all your eggs in one basket. You know, I mean, media has a way of going away, even your favorite programs, and we just do this one night a week. So it's important to find other points of affirmation for your beliefs. And, you know, it's also good to get contradictions and challenges to them. I mean, you got to believe, Ron, that most people do not like to have their belief challenged. In fact, usually it's a good way to get in an argument and not just the discussion. If you say to somebody, you're wrong, I don't agree with you, it's very hard to get people to say, let me consider seriously what you're saying. I mean, I've had the experience over the years of talking with all sorts of right-wingers. And at some point in the conversation, I haven't done this in a long time, I'll say, you know, I understand fully what you're saying. What do you think I'm saying? And there's this silence. I said, just give me kind of like a sentence or two summary of what I'm saying. And I said, what you're saying is, and I repeat back to them sort of a summary of what they've just related. And I said, tell me what I've just seen. And they go, you hate America and you hope everybody dies, or, you know, something that means they are clueless as to what I said. I mean, and that is the old open and closed minds. And I'm not trying to say that everybody on the right has an absolutely, well, almost everybody on the right has a closed mind, I think. Because generally, and I'm sorry, folks, if you're on the right, if you're Republicans or what have you, this is my belief, that they usually have an authoritarian character structure. They like order. They don't like ambiguity. They like absolutely a tradition. They love to conserve what is, no matter how bad it might be. Remember, I always go through that litany of what conservatives wanted to conserve. They wanted to conserve British rule. They wanted to conserve slavery. They wanted to conserve the men only voting. They wanted to conserve segregation. And on and on like that. They're always for the status quo. Or sometimes, like these days, they want to go back. They'd love to go back to like the 1880s or the 1890s, or at least before the 1930s. We didn't have things like a minimum wage and Social Security and what have you. But, I wasn't even going to start ranting and raving like this with my own little closed mind, right? Now, I mean, I got to say, there was somebody in Congress one time that said, I've heard many a speech on the floor of the House of Representatives that have brought a tear to my eye, but nary a one that changed my vote. Now, I have to say, in sort of the macro or the larger picture of things, I doubt if anybody's going to make me alter my overall general beliefs within the context about certain things. I don't know, certain aspects, certain subjects or whatever. Yeah, I'm always curious to have people say, well, have you ever considered this, or do you realize that, whatever. But here's what I'm asking you. So Ron says that he can't talk with his family, and yet we know some people, they're married to people that have absolutely opposite political beliefs or absolutely opposite religious beliefs, and I can't see how that works. Although, as Ron said, in my family, most of my family are atheists, but we also have some Christians and a Jew or two, yes. And so, I don't know, the Christians don't try to convert the Jews, and the Christians and the Jews don't try to, try to make us atheists believe, and we atheists don't start big arguments every time one of them says it's a Christian holiday or a Jewish holiday or something like that. Pardon me. And so we don't talk about it. But I guess what one of the things unites us, and that's what I always say, is ethical and political agreement. So it doesn't matter what the religion is. It doesn't matter what the creed is. We all agree. So we're all, you know, from liberals to wild-eyed radicals on the left. So I think that makes the big difference. But I wonder if there, you know, how you deal with that. Increasingly, too, I don't know. Maybe I'm just mellowing. I hate the thought of it. But in my daily life, people say the wackiest right-wing political things, the stupidest things about Barack Obama. Not to say that he can't be criticized. He should be criticized on lots of stuff. But and I just go, huh. Or sometimes I actually ask them questions because I'm interested how belief systems are structured and where they get their information. And I'm, I'll say, like, oh, wow, why do you believe that? Or where'd you get that information from? Like if, like Ron says, if Obama's a homosexual Muslim cheating on his wife in between AA meetings, where'd you hear that? And I'm always curious to where these beliefs come from. So if you got any comments, how do you deal with parents or spouses or brothers and sisters or what have you that have completely opposite views of yours? Because I suppose if they're, well, family, family, you can't divorce. I suppose if you don't learn to get along within like a marriage, for instance, or a friendship, you're just out of there, right? You go, well, if you're interested in talking about that, let me know. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Just put that out there. Now, we're coming up on an election. Just had a Michigan gubernatorial debate between Virge Bonaro and Rick Snyder. Rick Snyder, what does he call himself? The nerd. Never been elected to political office. Bonaro, the outspoken, eloquent, I think, mayor of Lansing. And one thing that's interesting is the Carpenters Union. I haven't been following the gubernatorial race that much. I just sort of, I say reflexively. I mean, I couldn't imagine voting for a Republican. So it doesn't take a lot of investigation on my part. It's not to say there's, I'm still thinking, I don't know. I probably will vote for the Green candidate in my district, the 9th district, where Sandra Levin. I've just had enough of that guy. So, but Republican, never. So I don't have to, and I know Green candidates are running for governor and all that as well. And some people think, why should we vote? What the third parties always say, it's better to vote for something you don't want and, what is it? So better to vote for something you want and not get it than vote for something you don't want and get it. But the Carpenters Union has endorsed the Republican Rick Snyder. Unions, of course, we always think are lockstep with the Democrats. Not entirely true. The only thing I can think of, and that's why I probably should have checked out Rick Snyder's platform a little more, is he must have some big call for construction, because that's what motivates these guys, right? Or maybe they're hoping? I don't know. What, anybody know anything about that? Well, let's talk a little about these elections. You look at the news, and whether online news sites or television news or the print media, and they're already predicting this disaster for the Democrats and, faced with a disaster in November, and they're generating this. I mean, that's one of their functions, right? But here, this is from Rasmussen Reports and their pollsters. 29% of likely U.S. voters now say they are Tea Party members or have close friends or family members who are part of the movement. As you can imagine, I don't know of anybody that's in that. I don't know anybody that knows anybody that's in that. Yet, I guess the kind of the rarefied circles I travel in, you wouldn't. The latest Rasmussen Reports National Telephone Survey finds that 17% describe them as members of the Tea Party. Remember they did a poll, was it this year or last year? 20% of the people said they supported socialism. You don't hear anything about that. And so they're not given any coherence, any image coherence in the public dialogue. Because, again, it's media that defines reality. Remember, power is the ability to define phenomena. If you can define phenomena out there, then that's reality. Okay? So 17% describe themselves as members of the Tea Party. 20% say they're socialists. You ever hear anything about the 20% that are socialists? I guess they haven't coalesced into a coherent political movement. A lot of socialists think, I'm just going to vote for the Democrats because they're nothing like I want, but they're A lot better than the Republicans. So that's the, what we call the lesser of the two evils theory. 12% more say they are not members themselves, but have friends or family who are involved in the small government anti-tax movement. Now, I don't get that. That's all they're about, small government. That, well, we have this enormous government. I mean, the hugest thing about the government is the war machine and the military-industrial complex. None of them want to get rid of that. I mean, essentially, just what they want to do is they don't want to pay any taxes. And actually, almost all of them that are the cannon fodder for the Tea Party, the teabaggers. Ooh, yeah, I'm calling them teabaggers once tonight. I'll start. The teabaggers are essentially the cannon fodder for these billionaires that are funding the teabaggers. Voters are now almost evenly divided in their views of the movement. 41% have a favorable opinion of the Tea Party. 40% view it unfavorably. 19% are undecided. That sounds absolutely incredible to me. I mean, again, I don't know a single person that that you know can't spit every time they say teabagger. How about this one? Desperate for jobs and cooled towards President Barack Obama, working class whites are flocking to Republicans, turning a group long wary of Democrats into an even bigger impediment to the party's drive to keep control of Congress. An Associated Press poll shows whites without four-year college degrees preferring Republican candidates by twice the margin of the last two elections when Democrats made significant gains in the House and Senate. The poll conducted, well, then just got a lot of intricate figures. I mean, are you really that dumb? Sorry to say it out like that. But the whole Republican effort is being funded by these huge corporations, their political action committees, these things set up by Karl Rove, funneling tens of millions of dollars, the Koch brothers who want essentially small government so their corporations aren't regulated. I mean, they'll throw you, you know, a few pieces of raw meat, you know, about gays or guns or religion or something like that. But they don't care about that, these rich guys that, you know, whose banner you're carrying. I mean, you think you're carrying the banner of the Constitution or the gun, the government of the, or the banner of the Republic or, you know, something like that, something that animates you. But it's all about them, about this 1% that don't want to be taxed anymore, even though they got so much money, they can take hundreds of millions of dollars and fund advertisements against, against Democrats. Here, Karl Rove. The veteran strategist from the Republicans who helped put George W. Bush in the White House is looking to become a big player. Two groups conceived of by Rove and Ed Gillespie, a former Republican National Committee chairman, announced a $4.2 million ad buy in eight contested Senate races. To date, the two groups have spent about $18 million on campaigns, most of it on ads, all of it driven by right-wing corporate dollars. Now, let me tell you this, or let me ask you this, and you give me a call, 313-298-WRIF. Do you really actually believe that the Republican political structure or the billionaires that are funding it all really care about you? I mean, are you that stupid? I mean, come on, you can't be. They really don't care about you at all. Now, you're saying, well, I don't think the Democrats do either. Well, I'm not going to stand here and defend any Democratic politician, maybe a couple, but in the main, you know, they're politicians. That guy Alan Grayson from Florida, John Conyers, people like that, Dennis Kucinich. I think they're really decent people and have an agenda that would make some sense. Bernie Sanders and what's the guy that's Wisconsin? Why can't I think of his name? So there's a few. I mean, I wouldn't even count our two senators and in among those that I would bother to defend. But we're talking, though, about the base of the Democratic Party that really believes in a what would be a liberal agenda, essentially one of tolerance, of a decent standard of living for everybody. I mean, you're talking about Republican candidates that want to repeal minimum wage. They want to privatize Social Security. They want to turn it over to their buddies on Wall Street. They want to continue every single war. They are the originators and the benefactors of the military-industrial complex. which is some of the, when they talk about working class whites, the people, those are the people that send their sons off to die in Afghanistan, in Iraq. They've already died there. Yeah. And what do you think they're doing it for? Only so they will make more money. And you support them? If somebody said, I'm staying home, I can't stand either party, I'd say, well, okay, you know, I understand that, but let me see if there's anything here. Oh, yeah, it's just more about how these Republicans are talking about repealing the minimum wage. Maybe they'll repeal the what do you call it as well, the weekend or something like that. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. All right, one of the questions I was asking, are there people in your life that have 180-degree opposite approach to the world in terms of politics or religion and people you have to deal with? Sometimes people at work, sometimes it's in your family, brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers. Yeah, very frequently, the kids go the other way. All right, let's see. Here is Roger in Detroit. He wants to take a stab at that question. Roger, hi, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks, Peter. I was listening to what you said earlier about, you know, talking to people, and you say things to them and see if they're paying attention, and they look at you like you're rocking your head. I do exactly the same thing. I talk to people just like that and see if they're paying attention. But one of the things I really wanted to tell you is that you've mentioned Noam Chomsky a lot in the past.
Sure.
I finally picked up one of his books, Hegemony or Survival.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good book.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you can't do too badly by picking up Noam Chomsky books. That's Chomsky for people
right.
that are listening. You just Google that, and he's
right.
an amazing guy.
Right. Anyway, that's really all I wanted to say. I'm just impressed for an atheist that you're so open-minded, but that doesn't matter. Atheism doesn't mean anything. It's just, you know, some people have, you know, they just look at things that way. But I'm impressed with your critical mind. That's what I like.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it, Roger.
You have a good evening.
You too. Thanks Bye. For calling. 313-298-WRIF. Good evening. You are on the air, but I can't see your name on my board. Are you talking about jokes? Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Well, my name is Scott. I'm from Wixom.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, but earlier you were saying something about the Muslims. And when I called, she thought I said them people. But my thing is that I saw Sam Kinison live in concert, and he dropped a Bible, and he didn't flip out, but Muslims freak out because right after 9/11, I was down in Dearborn, and I saw so many people in the street burning an American flag.
You know, wait. You know what? I don't believe you for a second. You are lying.
What?
You are lying. You are lying. After 9/11, there were all sorts of demonstrations of grief and support in Dearborn. And if you want to try to tell me you saw even one American flag being burned, sir, you are a liar of the first degree.
I wish to God I would have hit my camera. Wish to God I had my camera. I swear, and it was on the news. But
it was never on the news. I don't want to hear this crap. It's not even worth listening to. In fact, if there's people, and I know there's a few, you know, one of the things was there was people all over the world expressed sympathy for us during, I mean, George Bush, of course, ruined everything. There was a friend of mine who is a wine, what would you say, a wine specialist who went to a, who wound up just quite by accident in a Hezbollah village in Lebanon. He had gone there to see a wine dealer in Lebanon. Probably he's a wine writer. I don't know. What do you call people that are in the wine, that go over the world doing wine stuff? He just wrote me from Ecuador and all that, where he was recently. Anyway, he went into this village. There were huge posters of the Ayatollah Khomeini. Remember the guy that engineered the capture of the American embassy in Tehran back in, what was it, 79? Yeah, 1979. And that's where he was when 9/11 occurred. And he thought, oh, no. People came up to him and said, we know how you feel, like that. Every person he met over there expressed sympathy. For Americans. There were candlelight vigils in Arab countries all over the world for this hideous attack on us. And that's calumny. That's just a lie of the first magnitude. And you know what? Sometimes people, through their prejudicial eyes, I'm going to talk a little more about other prejudices in a minute, actually believe that. I mean, maybe, for all I know, they call or believe. But remember, he even said he saw lots of American flags being burned. Any Dearbornites there? Because there's one of these crazy Republicans, what's this woman's name? Engel, who's angling to take over Harry Reid's seat in Nevada. But let me get a few other people on the air. We'll talk about it. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Nick in Rochester Hills. Nick, hi. It's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
First I want to say Russ Feingold, that's probably who you're thinking.
Yeah, sorry, boy, my brain was just, in Wisconsin.
Yep, and about political difference among family members, actually I was over at my mom's for dinner today, and my sister lives there as well, and they both pretty much vote Republican as the norm. They don't really think about it, it's kind of just what they identify with, it's what they've grown up with, and I think I actually kind of made a breakthrough today when I was over. I usually try to convince them not to vote Republican, not necessarily vote Democrat, but just don't vote Republican. And I did it with a couple pie graphs, actually. I wrote a couple pie graphs on a napkin. One represented the total wealth in the country. One represented the population. I showed them how the richest 1% of the country owns 25% of the nation's wealth and how the poorest 50% only control 10%, and then I showed them how the Republicans represent that richest 1%. And I think those graphs and them being able to visualize it really struck home with them, and they realized, wow, that is really insane.
Well, let me ask you this, Nick, though. Had you, when you would have these discussions or debates within your family, did they stay on a level of civility, or do they, like they can within families, get really out of control? I mean, there's one member of our family that says no talk about politics or religion.
Actually, no, none of them get to know. The thing is, none of them really are that political, I would say, but they all tend to vote Republican. But they're not exactly what you would say, like, right-wingers. Like, there was a study on Alternet recently, actually, that showed that the poorer you get or the worse your economic situation gets, the more like you are to vote conservative. Not necessarily because you think consciously to vote conservative, but just something about that. You tend to, like, go towards, like, simpler things that conservatives try to, like, put out there, like, oh, smaller government will help your business. It will increase help out small businesses.
Well, maybe, too. It's just identification with the master. Who knows? Let's see. Where did I see this also in here? It said that, I can't find this. I didn't underline this. But, with the higher, the, it said, oh, yeah. Well, it said that working class whites are likelier than white college graduates to say their families are suffering financially and have a relative who's recently lost a job. Well, that's true. And they're less optimistic about the country's economy, which makes sense. But do they realize who got us into this? All right, Nick, thank you very much. Let's get one more call before we take a break. But, hey, everybody hold on. We'll get you all on the air. Here's Paul in Sterling Heights. Hi, Paul. It's Peter. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Concerning how you started off, how to talk with your family.
Yeah.
First of all, both my parents were retired. My dad died first. I had to oversee my mom's health care at the end of her life. And I'm very proud of the fact that after seeing how some nursing homes are, well, the worst nursing homes smell like dirty diapers. The best nursing homes just seemed like warehouses for people waiting to die.
Yeah.
I paid for my mom to have care in her own home, and she died in her own bed, and I'm pretty proud of that.
Well, you should be. It's expensive, too. I know I've had some of those same similar situations in our family, my wife's family. It's tragic.
Before both my parents died, I found it necessary for me, upon leaving my parents' house, to tell both parents, I love you, Dad. I love you, Mom. And the weird thing is, 2 years later, my dad actually told me, I love you too. I thought, man, that's a, you know, that's great, you know. My mom was a bit different. She would say, don't say it if you don't mean it.
Well, and I mean, you must have meant it too. Well, listen, you can't do any better as a son, Paul. And on one hand, though, it's too bad that we don't have a society in which that we can take care of our elders without having to go broke ourselves. But that's the way things are set up. So thank you. Appreciate that. I want to get this one in real quickly. It's Monir from Windsor. Hi, you're on the air. Thanks for making our program international. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. How
Hi.
Are you?
Good.
I like your show.
Thank you.
For burning holy books, we as Muslims, we don't accept anyone to burn any books, Bible or Torah or Quran. We have to respect all religions. And if you ask any Muslim and give him a Bible to burn it, he will say no, because Muslims... not allowed, Muslims are not allowed to burn any holy books, no matter for Jewish, for Christian, for any other holy books. I don't know why people don't want to piss us off. I don't know. Like, we have no problem. You don't see anyone burn any Bible or Torah in any Muslim country. I don't know why people, like, wants to burn Quran.
Well, it's people that want to make difficult situations even worse than they are. And, Monir, you're right. If people would just all people chill a little, we'd all be a lot better off. All right, I got to take a break, so thank you very much. And Kim and Mike and Tony and Jeremy and Matt, you hang on, and we'll get your calls when we come back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. Your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
This is your local movie theater.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
But this Friday, this is your local movie theater on Jackass 3D.
3, 2, 1.
I feel like I got run over by a buffalo.
Experience Jackass 3D for yourself this Friday. Do not attempt any stunts from this movie. Rated R. No one under 17 admitted without parent.
Welcome to the REI Fall Sale. How may I help you?
Well, I'm looking for a lightweight running...
REI Airflight hoodie?
Yes, and some ultra-comfortable...
Oslo Moran Gore-Tex hiking boots?
You guessed it. Oh, and a...
REI Lookout 40-pack.
Okay, this place is great.
We know what you need because we know what you love. Shop REI's Fall Sale October 8th through 17th and save up to 30% on outdoor gear and clothing. Plus, members get 20% off one full-priced item. Exclusions apply. Visit REI or REI.com. REI. Find out.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
Hi, this is Mark from Ice and Creed.
Hey, everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad.
This is Chris.
This is Brian from Cabo.
And you've got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, the Riff.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Feels like time's running out.
maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronix Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronix Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronix Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. No Jolene, though. She may be calling in, maybe even coming. She's just getting off a plane coming back from Los Angeles. She was at the opening in Los Angeles of Jackass 3D. Man, I really am envying her. I wish it could have been me. Anyway, we're talking about lots of things. Some guy called in and said that after 9/11, he was in Dearborn and saw Muslims burning flags, plurals there. I said, it's an absolute lie. It never happened. It was made up. And I was, whatever I say, they got 98% assuredness. So I went and I Googled it. I went to Snopes.com. Whenever you hear rumors, and particularly you get these insane right-wing emails, go to Snopes. That's Snopes.com. Like if they say, you know, the President Obama is a Muslim, you just type that in. Say, put in Obama Muslim, see what you get on. Okay, let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Kim in Highland. Hey, Kim, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to talk about what I saw after 9/11.
Yeah.
I pulled over. I was in a gas station. This like a week after in West Bloomfield. And that's a pretty big Arab community there, too. I went into this gas station and to buy a pop, and I was standing in line, and I looked up. And because it was a long line, it was like everything around me was red, white, and blue. The guy, it was an Arab-owned gas station. He had so many flags, and he had, you know, stickers and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, wow, this is, I mean, it's so noticeable. And then I'm like, this guy, he's like, I thought, like, he's either very patriotic, trying to show it, or he was afraid of, because of the mood, you know, people retaliating sure. or something. And I felt so bad for him.
Well, you know, Kim, think about guilt by association. I mean, for one thing, it was these Saudis that did it. Our allies. It wasn't Iraqis. It was not Afghans, right? It wasn't anybody that that was associated with anything here in this country. And somehow, because you come from that background, you're responsible for every insane act. I mean, why doesn't somebody come up to me, Kim, or to you and say, you know, you're responsible for Oklahoma City bombing because a white man did that, right? You know, no one would say that to us, right?
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have one more thing.
Sure.
If I may. Have you seen your chalkboard guy, your friend?
Oh, yeah.
There's a YouTube video. If Stephanie could get it for you, it is so cool. It's Donald Duck Meets Glenn Beck.
I have seen that. In fact, if you, I think that's on my website. Let me
see. Oh, is it?
Where? Oh, yeah. If you go to my website, it's Peter Werbe, Werbe.com, and go down in the right-hand column. Usually I send people the left-hand column, but this is the right-hand column. It's Donald Duck meets Glenn Beck in Right Wing Radio Duck.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, so you did see it. I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, I loved it.
Okay.
Thank you, Kim.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Here is Tony in Waterford. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you tonight?
Good. Doing good.
Good. I heard your earlier comment about Democrats that you liked. There were a few. You named two. One was Alan Grayson from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was John Conyers.
And Dennis Kucinich of Cleveland, yeah.
Right. And I like the first and the last, but I do not like the middle.
Conyers.
John Conyers promised when he was running for re-election in 2006 that he would hold hearings as chairman of the Judiciary Committee against Dick Cheney and George Bush. And when he had the opportunity to do so, he backed down in the face of Nancy Pelosi threatening him with loss of the chairmanship of the committee.
I know he didn't do it. Are you sure that the guy's pretty secure? I mean, let's put it this way. Whatever the reason was, there was a need to investigate the lies that got us into Iraq. John Conyers knows that they were lies. In fact, he held unofficial hearings about the origins of the Iraq War and the lies that Bush and Cheney and the rest of them told. He had the ability to actually bring that in an official capacity and did not. So whether it was because he was threatened or whatever, he didn't do it and deserves criticism for it. I absolutely agree with you.
Right. And the thing about him that I don't like is that when I confronted him with this personally, I said that I would like to speak with Nancy Pelosi. And that was before I had an opportunity that I understood that he had the final decision, not her.
Mm-hmm.
And he offered to arrange a meeting with me, with Nancy Pelosi in her office in Washington. And then when I followed through with his office in Trenton, his congressional office, they never made it happen.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that they wouldn't. It was Barack Obama's political decision that they weren't going to dredge up what they considered the past. They were going to go on forward and, in positive. Well, I think that was a tremendous political error. And I also think that since there were so many laws broken by the Bush administration, that it was incumbent upon the new administration to begin looking at that legislatively, but also on a criminal basis as well, because so many laws were broken by Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest of them. But they're not going to do that, and because there is a gulf in terms of the two parties now, and yet they don't want to put themselves like the Obama administration doesn't want to put themselves in a position where when they leave office, say like a Republican administration is going to start saying, well, we're going to start a legislative investigation of you, except that's exactly what the Republicans have promised to do as a way of completely obstructing anything more happening during the Obama administration. They say if they win the House of Representatives, because they don't have a chance to do it in the Senate, I don't think they're going to do it in the House either, but they are going to start any number of investigations and just keep the Obama administration on the defensive all the time. I mean, you would think that the Democrats are a party of wimps. because do they realize that the other side is playing hardball and they're just playing, you know, wolfball or whatever? What is that stuff? All right, but I agree with you, Tony. Thank you. Thanks for calling. Let's see. We will go right here. It's Matt in Dearborn. Matt, what did you hear that call about the guy who said there was all these flags being burned in Dearborn on 9/11 or 9/12?
Yes, I did hear that call. Actually, at the time, I was not living in Dearborn, so I couldn't confirm that. But no, I don't believe anything like that was going on.
It didn't.
I think there was a large outcrop of support, like you said, not just here, but internationally. Anyway, what I was calling about was in regards to that 9/11, and actually your last call, it kind of all ties together. You talk about investigations and inquiries. I truly believe that in order to really kind of fix or, you know, some of the things that have happened, you know, these past 10 years, we really need an honest, sane, sound, independent investigation of what actually happened that morning. And there's just a lot of things that don't add up with the official commission report. And the science itself just doesn't make sense. And there's been a number of studies and a lot of research by very prominent, you know, not whack fringe kook people, but professionals, architects, engineers, pilots, members of the military who all say that, you know, the 9/11 commission report is not giving us all the, you know, the full story.
Well, you know, it's never going to happen, right?
Sad to say, yeah.
You
know, I think, and it kind of ties in, you know, with basically the two parties, you know, the Democrats and Republicans. You know, they're both corporate controlled and owned basically by the same masters. And so far as that, until we can get like a viable, you know, third party progressive, some, you know, people that actually a party or a candidate that would actually, you know, go for the people's interest, I'm not very optimistic about the future of the country.
Well, there's got to be first and foremost a mass movement. I mean, there are movements of sorts, and I don't mean the teabaggers, but there are on both sides of the political spectrum, there are movements. You only get the information about the right wing side of it. But I mean, what happens, for instance, you have a segregationist like Lyndon Johnson, who has this whole segregationist wing that's trying to conservative Democrats in the South that want to conserve this vile system of racial discrimination. And suddenly there's this mass movement of African-American people demanding their rights and also any number of white people backing that. And guess what? Old Southern racist Lyndon Johnson starts saying, "We shall overcome." So what could happen, of course, is that a movement would express, or a politician, even in the Democratic Party, say, would express the desires, whatever, of a mass movement. I mean, because the first thing they'll try to do is co-opt it, right?
Yeah, that is true. Subvert it or derail it.
Yeah. I mean, in other countries, the Greens have gotten a little bit of political power and have carried out their agenda to some extent. Right now, and what people usually feel is that the vote for a third party is generally going to, depending on if you vote for the Constitution Party, then you're helping the Democrats. If you vote for the Green Party, you're helping the Republicans. But we shall see. All right, Matt, thank you very much. Ooh, all of a sudden, a bunch of open lines for you. 313-298-WRIF. That's interesting, and I'm not trying to force the conversation, although it sounds like it, doesn't it? We were talking earlier about how do you deal with people in your life that has the opposite political view or an opposite religious view. Could there be anyone who is a tolerant person who has respect for all people? Say be married to a racist? I can't imagine that. I mean, I can't imagine how a Republican and a Democrat could live under the same roof. But I don't know. People do it. Again, with families, usually what happens, either people fight like cats and dogs, or they make an agreement that we're not talking about politics or religion. Here is Terry. Terry's in Ferndale. Terry, thanks for calling 313-298-WRI if you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good. Excellent.
Good. I just wanted to mention I want to reply to the gentleman that called about respecting holy books.
Uh-huh.
And personally, I don't respect them. I respect science and rational thinking. And if I don't know why, if somebody who claims they have a connection to a higher being, why they would get upset about a, you know, the burning of a holy book.
Well, if, I agree. I absolutely agree.
And I just wanted to add real quick, my wife happens to be of Lebanese descent. She's from Dearborn. We're both atheists. And her family is secular. They're tolerant. But I get a lot of hypersensitivity from, you know, people that are religious. A lot of times they can dish it out, but they can't take it.
Well, they expect you to be absolutely tolerant of their beliefs, but usually have absolutely no tolerance whatsoever for yours.
Right. And one last thing, I think you can be a good person and be a good human being, you know, without the belief in an intervening God. And that's all I have to say, and thank you very much.
Hey, Terry, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, of course, that's true. And what I always say is that these people I know that are religious, that are good people, take away their religion, they'd be good people. All the same, right? And some of the worst people in the world have been atheists, and some of the worst people in the world have been religious. So I'm not even sure that that makes much of a difference. Although you don't have atheists fighting, right? You have all these religions fighting all the time, where, you know, whether in Asia or Europe or the Middle East or whatever, because they alone have the true religion. All right, let's see. Here is Jeremy. Jeremy's in St. Clair Shores. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Good.
I'm calling in regard to, you started at the top of the show talking about parents and their children having different political beliefs, and it's kind of weird that yesterday I was talking to my dad a little bit, and I'd been reading this book called Tears of a Clown by this guy named Milbank, and it's about Glenn Beck.
Yeah, and, right.
And he uses the what Edward R. Murrow did with Joseph McCarthy, and, you know, uses Beck's own words. And I read it, and you can't help but feeling that the guy is exactly like McCarthy or like, you know, Coughlin. And there's this beautiful part in the book where he has this quote, and you think it's Beck, but, oh, nope, it was Coughlin. So I was talking to my dad a little bit about
that. Well, let me just bring people up to speed on who you're talking about. This was Father Coughlin, that's how you say his name. He was called the radio priest. He was the pastor of the Shrine of the Little Flower in Royal Oak, Michigan, and he was a sympathizer with the fascists. He was anti-Semitic. They gave him a national platform. He was this horrid man. This absolutely horrid man, and was supported by the Catholic hierarchy in the Detroit area. And finally, when World War II came, they shut him down.
Yeah.
Yeah, go. Sorry, go ahead.
And so, you know, I told my dad about it, and he does the old, well, you know, Beck has some good points, and I'm just like, Dad, he's like Joe McCarthy. You know, he goes out and he calls people commies and all that stuff, and socialists, and he hates progressives and all that good stuff. But, you know, he did call me out on one thing. He goes, well, have you ever watched his show? And I told him, yeah, I tried to watch it last night, and I turned it off, and within 5 minutes. And then it was kind of like, let's just talk about something else. This isn't going to go anywhere.
Well, maybe, you know, I'll tell you, with dads, particularly sons and dads, sometimes maybe that's even the best thing to do. I mean, I could always tell, you know, my dad was very, very liberal. And, in fact, when they lived in the East, they're from Detroit, and I was born and raised in Detroit, lived here all my life. But he and my mother moved East, and he was head of, like, the Valley Peace Center in the Connecticut Valley. But we would get into things. And then I learned after a while, you could just tell by his voice, okay, time to maybe drop it. I would just say, yeah, well, I see what you mean. And that would be it. All right, Jeremy, thank you very much. Let me see. I want to do this. Josh, stay on the line. I want to get your call, but I don't want to have to cut you short because you want to talk about two different religions in one household as well. And Carol from Detroit wants to tell us about the most dangerous man in America, Wendy's in Shelby Township. She's an active Democrat and married a Republican. I got to hear this story, and Martin's in Detroit. We'll get him on as well. So hang on, and we'll be right back. And Jalene Jordan said she was going to call in at noon. She was in Los Angeles for the opening of Jackass 3D. Oh, I can't wait to hear this story.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
This is your local movie theater.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
But this Friday, this is your local movie theater on Jackass 3D.
3, 2, 1.
What did it feel like? I felt like I got run over by a buffalo.
Experience Jackass 3D for yourself this Friday. Do not attempt any stunts from this movie. Rated R. No one under 17 admitted without parent.
Welcome to the REI Fall Sale. How may I help you?
Well, I'm looking for a lightweight running...
REI Airflight hoodie?
Yes, and some ultra-comfortable...
Oslo Moran Gore-Tex hiking boots?
You guessed it. Oh, and a...
REI Lookout 40-pack.
Okay, this place is great.
We know what you need because we know what you love. Shop REI's Fall Sale October 8th through 17th and save up to 30% on outdoor gear and clothing. Plus, members get 20% off on full-priced items. Exclusions apply. Visit REI or REI.com. REI. Find out.
Detroit's Rock Station 101, The Real Riff.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see 1, 2,
ow,
3, 4, 5, 6.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Thank you, and we're back. You know, when it comes to fighting crime, he's never going to roll over. He's McGruff the Crime Dog.
Roll over. You're okay, Joy.
Thanks.
And I got two words to make your neighborhood safer.
Uh-huh.
Coffee cake.
Ah, the old poison coffee cake trick. The crook takes a bite, falls down to the ground.
No, it's for your neighbors.
You want to poison your neighbors?
No, never.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, for 25 years, I've been giving tips about preventing crime. One of them is to invite people over for a cup of coffee and share the problems you see on your street and what to do about
them. That's great.
You can invite your local police officer to help, too.
I'd come to your doghouse for coffee cake in a safer neighborhood.
You can cut down on crime by not just locking your door, but opening up to your neighbors.
Still, a 10-pound bundt cake dropped on a bad guy's foot could help.
It couldn't hurt. And go on to WePrevent.org for other tips that help, too.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Julene Jordan, where are you? It's midnight. You said you'd call in at that time. Julene, just coming back from the opening of Jackass 3D in Los Angeles. Hopefully either we'll hear from her or she'll come bursting through the door. A Mississippi judge has ordered an attorney to spend several hours in jail. Did you see this? This happened last Wednesday. The attorney chose not to recite the Pledge of Allegiance in court. The Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal reported that Chancery Judge Talmadge Littlejohn told a court audience to rise and say the pledge. People in the courtroom, said Danny Lampley of Oxford, stood but did not say the words. And he was thrown in jail for about, 4 or 5 hours. Now, remember the pledge? It ends after, under God. That got put in the late 50s. I'd never say that. But it ends with liberty and justice for all. With liberty and justice for all. Maybe old Judge Talmadge Littlejohn didn't read it. It's just sort of, I don't know what. What role does it play? That pledge was written by Francis Bellamy, 1892, and old Ralph Bellamy. I'm sorry, Ralph was his, where is this here? I sort of lost it. Ralph was, actually, it's not Ralph Bellamy, it was the actor, wasn't he? Francis Bellamy was a Baptist minister, a Christian socialist. You realize that when you say the pledge, you are saying a pledge written by a socialist? And he was a cousin of Edward Bellamy, who was also a socialist utopian novelist, who wrote, Looking Backwards. So what do you make of all this? Could be a plot here. But just probably to make sure that the socialist stuff didn't stain our pledge, these Republicans in the 1950s who were saying that we had to devote the country to Christ. I mean, they made no bones about it. It wasn't just God, the God of everyone, the God of the universe that takes different expressions of spirituality. It was the Christian religion that this was inserted, I would say, unconstitutionally, into the Pledge of Allegiance, which is one reason I would never say it, or at least drop that out or something like that. Anyway, let's get back to our calls. What do you think? 313-298-9743. WRIF. Here is Wendy, improbably a active Democrat married to a Republican. It must be love, huh, Wendy?
Yes, it must be. I met my husband 11 years ago, and sad to say, he voted for George W. Bush twice, and it darn near broke our marriage. I'm, as I said, been very, very active. I campaigned for Obama 40 hours a week. I've met Michelle Obama, introduced her. I was just extremely active. But I'm happy to say, with perseverance, he did end up voting for Barack Obama after he voted for John McCain in the primaries. I was so involved. He didn't want me driving alone to Grand Rapids to hear Obama speak, and he came with me and listened, and his building business was going down. The economy was crashing, and he wasn't up on that high horse anymore. And happy to report that people do change, and he could see the light and see right from wrong. And so now it's a bit of a happier marriage.
Well, Wendy, what about now? I mean, so many Republicans, a few which did vote for Obama, are saying, well, he hasn't done anything he said he's done, which isn't true, of course. He's done a lot. He's actually fulfilled more promises than he's broken, although I certainly have a lot of criticisms of him and what he hasn't done and some things with that he has done, which are very disturbing. So what do you think? How's he going to vote in the election coming up?
That's a good question. I myself, as far as Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Guantanamo, I've been let down tremendously. I don't know that I have the fire that I had anymore. I feel very, very sad and disheartened. However, I think that through this, he's changed. I mean, I've watched this man who had the Republican mentality, America's the best, and we should be going to Iraq, and yada, yada. He really did change when he was knocked down, and he saw that the economy that we had was very false. And everything he had could be taken. And I think he knows at this point that he's not in the tax bracket. He really never was, but he thought he was. And he was fed what his parents told him. And mm-hmm. that was the bottom line. I mean, he was a Republican because his parents were Republicans, and that's just how it was. I do believe he will continue to vote Democratic, at least for the time being, and I sincerely think he has changed, but I just wanted to say it was a very rough go. I mean, during the John Kerry, George Bush election, when he voted for George Bush, I really thought, can I stay married to this man? And it's a very difficult thing, and I'm, you know, proud to say we worked through it, but it's very tough for a very liberal, active woman to be a Republican.
All right, Wendy, thank you so much. Thanks for your story. Anybody else want to relate to how they deal with people in their household? Imagine that. I mean, if all of a sudden my wife said, I'm becoming a Republican, I just don't even, that's on. I don't know what I would do. I guess I would think, I mean, she's more radical than I am. So I don't have to worry about that. But if all of a sudden she started saying, you know, they're starting to make some real sense. Now, let me see. Am I getting this call that I think it is? I can just tell from yes. Jackass 3, Jalene Jordan.
Peter Werby, how are you?
Where are you?
I just got off the plane. My ears are all plugged. I have one bar on my phone, but damn it, I'm calling you.
Well, good. Jalene Jordan, for those of you who don't know, is my my co-host here on Night Call, my partner in thought crime, and she's just flying back from Los Angeles where she was at the opening of Jackass 3D.
It was something else, let me tell you.
Tell me.
It was disturbingly delightful.
Wow.
Peter, I don't think you could take it.
Well,
I don't think you could take it. But the good news is I asked Johnny Knoxville all about his documentary about Detroit called Detroit Lives.
Yeah.
I encourage everyone to go to Google. and Google Detroit Lives, Johnny Knoxville. It's a 30-minute documentary that you can watch for free. It's usually in four parts, but it is worth the view because we talked extensively about it a couple of times this weekend, Mr. Knoxville and I, and he just kept going on and on about how cool Detroit is. And I'm like, thank you for the good rap. We'll take it.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So you coming by the station?
You know, I don't think I'm going to make it to the station,
but I will
be back next week. I promise you that.
You won't have time anyway. If you got to get to whatever, you got baggage, and then you'd never get. You'd get here for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, it would be a good 5 minutes, but not worth it.
No, we miss you.
Oh, thank you, Peter. I hope you had a great show tonight, and we'll be back on the air together again next Sunday. I look forward to being.
All right, Jalene Jordan, thank you so much. Thanks for giving us that call. And here's Carol from Detroit. She wants to tell us about the most dangerous man in America. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. I presume you know who I'm talking about.
Sure, absolutely. I saw the film. It's about Daniel Ellsberg, the guy, the ultimate whistleblower who blew the whistle on the Vietnam War.
Yeah, they're running it this week on PBS.
Oh, okay.
Several
That's good.
Times. And it's quite good.
Yeah, yeah. He was a man of incredible courage. He actually went to Cranbrook School out in, where is it, Birmingham or Bloomfield or wherever. He's an alum of Cranbrook here in the Detroit area.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and actually I saw him speak out there a few years ago.
Yeah, and I also wanted to say I can't believe everybody wants to go back to the economy that was the culmination of Reaganomics.
Well, I don't think everybody does. You know who I think really typified what's going to be happening is Wendy, who just called and said that she'd worked with such enthusiasm for Barack Obama and then has become disappointed. So I think the kind of energy that flowed during the 2008 campaign has just almost 100% dissipated. And there are going to be a few people that are going to drift and say, well, I guess the Democrats didn't do it. Let's try the Republicans. But I think that if the Republicans, in fact, make a lot of gains, it's going to be because great numbers of the base of the Democrat Party, pardon me, are just going to stay home. They're going to stay home.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, they expect to completely change everything, like in a year or anything, even if the way that it's set up, I don't think anybody has that power to change it.
I don't buy that. I mean, if Franklin Delano Roosevelt could do it, I mean, he really had to be forceful, and he wasn't forceful enough. I mean, for one thing, the whole idea of bipartisanship with a party, the Republicans, that are committed to destroying his presidency. Remember, the Oxycontin addict who said, we want the Obama administration to fail. They're concerned with political power only. And completely 100% beholden to corporate money. I mean, do the Democrats share in that? Yeah, but not to the extent. And also, they have a different base, the Democrats and the Republicans. And the Republicans, they will peel off regardless. Doesn't matter what kind of hypocrisy their candidates are exposed as being part of. It doesn't matter what kind of insane views they have of the world. They're there like a dog on a bone. All right. Thanks a lot, Carol. Appreciate it. Open lines for you, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Martin in Detroit. Hi, Martin. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Pete. Last week and the week before, you made some comments about Jesus not having actually existed.
I said there wasn't a lot of historic evidence say that he...
Yeah, I checked out some, and I found five hostile, two neutral, and two friendly references to Christ in ancient Roman writings.
Oh.
And ranging from within the first, and most of them were within the first 40 years after his death.
I love to hear things like this. Remember I was talking earlier about enjoying having one's beliefs challenged or things that you've said for a long time. I mean, my understanding that there was a mention of a historian, Josephus.
Josephus.
That what?
Josephus Flavius. He's the friendliest one, and some of his writings have been argued about. He's kind of the controversial. But then you have people who didn't like Christianity. Lucian of Samosata. I'm probably destroying the name. But the guy Cornelius Tacitus, he was writing in to his boss to find out what to do with Christians because he was killing so many of them and trying to decide which ones to kill. And he commented that they were followers of Christus put to death by Pontius Pilate during the reign of Tiberius. Pernicious superstition suppressed for a while in broke out in Judea and now is in the city of Rome. So they were really kind of, tied up in a knot about it.
Well, thank you for that. And in fact, as I remember, Martin, you do not use the internet.
That is correct.
Yeah. Well, okay. You can't send me that. Or I can look for that on my own. I mean, often I've said that over the years, simply to rattle people's cages, to not take all received wisdom for granted.
Well, let me make a slight correction here. Cornelius was talking about Nero blaming the Christians for setting fire to Rome. It was Pliny the Younger in 112, about the same year, was wondering what to do with Christians because he was, killing so many of them. He wanted to know, kill just the adults, the kids, men, women, who should I kill? So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, I will look up the information and ultimately whether the man of Jesus of Nazareth existed or not probably doesn't answer the question about who he was or what he did. A Southern Baptist minister is calling for Christians to avoid yoga and its spiritual attachments, getting plenty of pushback from enthusiasts who defend the ancient practice. Southern Baptist Seminary President Albert Moeller says the stretching and meditative discipline derived from Eastern religions is not a Christian pathway to God. He says the idea that the body is a vehicle for reaching consciousness with the divine, that's just not Christianity. Who said it was? Yoga fans say their numbers are growing in the U.S. Almost 16 million, 7% of adults do yoga. Other Christian leaders have said practicing yoga is incompatible with the teachings of Jesus. Man, can these people ever take a break? Pat Robertson, he's great. It's called the chanting and other spiritual components that go along with yoga. Really spooky. I don't want to start insulting people's religion, but most religions have stuff that you could call really spooky. I should almost play this right now, right?
Now, folks, here's something else I got a problem with. The Ten Commandments.
That's George Carlin. Okay, we won't play. I've played that before. Why do you say, why there's Ten Commandments? It's a marketing device. But whatever. All right, I won't go there. Here is, there's open lines again. 313-298-WRIF. Grab them or I will make a speech. Here's Frank in Clinton. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
We're good. I'm good. I'm just here by myself. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to talk about how I was married. I married a woman that was moderately conservative when I was a far, far left liberal. But then after we got married, I kind of changed, and now I'm the right-wing conservative. She's still kind of, I still call her a conservative, but more moderate than I am.
What was did she convince you or external events?
External events and her. It was a combination of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, that doesn't represent a problem. I mean, if you're fairly compatible, that's one thing. But you heard Wendy, who was talking about she was this active liberal Democrat working for Barack Obama 40 hours a week, and there was her husband who had voted for McCain. So,
yeah, well, I think though, if you have different politics, I think you can't really let ideology determine who you are and who you can get along with. Like, Peter, I disagree with most of what you say, but I still think you're a nice guy, and I still think we could get along if we met in person. I'd think the same of Jolene. and another liberal, Jon Bon Jovi. I'm a big fan of his, and it doesn't stop me from being a big fan of his that he's a big liberal. When it won't stop me.
You
I
know
think
what?
We gotta.
I always preach tolerance, and I have said this, and please take this. You know, I don't mean to insult you, but I am friendly with any number of conservatives and right-wingers, some of them, you know, around here where we work. But I don't think I would be friends with one. And here's why. Because I've got lots of friends. And to me, now, all right, I'm going to say something. You're going to really find this offensive. I maybe I shouldn't even say this. Give me the go-ahead or not. You can say don't say it. Should
you
I say it?
Say it, yeah.
All right. I think a conservative mentality is sort of a psychological disorder. Okay? I'm not trying to say they're crazy or something like that, but I would find it extraordinarily difficult to have close personal interactions with someone who was a conservative. I don't want to put him in jail. I don't want to kick him in the butt. I don't want to kick him out of a job. I don't want to do anything like that. But, I've got pretty strong opinions, and, you know, if I'm hurting your feelings or insulting you, I apologize to you, but
no, not at all.
That's the way I feel. Well, I'll let you ponder that one. And I mean, when I've said this before, people have said, you know, you say you're this tolerant guy, and here you're saying people you disagree with are crazy and they're psychos and what have you. I never call an individual like our last call. I never would call him a psycho and all that. But, I mean, these politicians, they are like whack job psychos. Let me, we're waiting for some lines to fill up, and you have an opportunity to do that as well. So in the meantime, let me just run this by you. Here is our theme for our Eat the Rich segment. That's Crocus. Eat the rich, out of the castles, into the ditch. Well, it's going the other way around, isn't it? When, no matter what they advocate, we're going into the ditch. It's the average man and woman the lower you are in the class pyramid, you know, up at the top, they're doing just great. Stock market now is over 11,000, and they are, they're doing just fine at the top. I just heard this 60 Minutes little segment. Any of you hear that? They were talking about how stocks are bought and sold now. They're not, remember they always show that frenzy on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange? Well, about 30% of stocks are traded there now. Now there's these almost secretive firms. They wouldn't even let the program in to interview anybody or film anybody. They are making like a penny on every stock they sell, except they sell millions of stocks, right, a day. Sometimes they hold stocks for 3 minutes and they make a penny. Well, they keep, you know, adding that up when it gets into the millions. You can see how they make millions and millions of dollars. So this is simply this, like, enormous crapshoot. It's nothing like what the stock market was intended. That is to fund enterprises, right? We talked about this before. You and I want to open a business. We don't have the money, so we invite 10 other people to give us $100 a piece, so we'll have 1,000. And then we say, okay, when we start to make a profit, we will give you X amount of dollars return because, you know, you put this all into motion. It's nothing about that now. It's just a thing in itself. And is this all real? Is there any real money there? It's just it's got every facet that's calling for a crash. Well, you may have seen this. While the stock market goes over 11,000 and Richie Rich Kid is making lots of money again, public jobs are dropping and amid a slowdown in private hiring. So this article in the New York Times says the 1-2 punch long feared by many economists hired by businesses has slowed while government jobs are disappearing at a record pace. Companies did add 64,000 jobs last month, but a slowdown from 93,000 jobs in August. Now, here's the deal. Overall, the economy lost 95,000 jobs because almost 160,000 jobs were lost by government jobs at all levels. And that's not just from those census workers, but there's layoffs all over the country in local governments as well as cutbacks occur. President Obama has repeatedly called for additional measures like infrastructure projects and tax incentives, which have been met with 100% opposition from Republicans over deficit concerns. The word stimulus itself seems to become politically toxic in the lead up to the midterm congressional elections next month. This is called Keynesian economics, right, where there's a transfer of wealth from private hands to the government, which then doles it out in a manner to create work. In fact, some people have said without that in modern capitalism, like just the free market, which is a terrible, bad joke, just doesn't work at all, the economy would fail. So you're saying, well, wait a minute, what about the free market? I mean, think military-industrial complex, which takes $1 trillion every year from the general fund, that's you and me, and transfers it to private corporations. And guess what? The private corporations, the ones doing war material and all that stuff, they hire people. So you say, wait a minute, isn't this a big stimulus? One thing it is. It's a permanent stimulus based around preparation for war and war fighting. That's why there has to continually be an enemy. That's why there has to continually be wars. So partly it's a war for oil. It's a war for control of pipelines. But it's a war for war so you can have war to justify the military-industrial complex so you can justify this transfer of wealth from you and me to the government, which then gives it to war corporations that make their fortune on war. And so you say, okay, doesn't that work? No, the problem is that it is way too inefficient. It just doesn't work. If instead you were taking, say, half of that, $500 billion a year, and putting it into infrastructure improvement, which this country desperately needs, into creating schools that didn't have 30 and 40 kids in it, and on and on and on, that all that supplied the civilian sector, that would work. This doesn't work. This is, again, the road to ruin. So these conservatives that are saying, you know, oh, it's a big transfer of wealth, the most monstrous transfer of wealth at all is in the military-industrial complex. Okay? All right. Oh, and here's what's happening as well. Chris from Taylor and Dan from Waterford, hang on, and we will get you on the air in about 30 seconds. I just got a copy of Solidarity Magazine, and that's the official magazine of the United Auto Workers. And Bob King, the newly elected president, true to his word, is beginning to make the UAW into a social movement. And there's a photograph of him at the School of the Americas, where he takes busloads of UAW members each November. School of Americas trains these Latin American troops to suppress their own people. Most of the governments have pulled out because now they're left-wing governments, but governments that are taking our money, like Colombia, they still use that. And all through this, I mean, there's calls for maybe a whole thing on wealth, power, and union-free labor, what happens when you don't have that. Talking about Veterans for Peace, so the farm workers, all of this stuff. The One Nation march last weekend that was ignored dutifully by the media. Big section on that. But here, when it comes down, what do they say? When rubber hits the road, General Motors has gotten the UAW to agree that under a cost-saving arrangement, GM will pay 60% of the plant's, this new plant, this thing they're going to make, the subcompact, low-price subcompact, the going wage of about $28 an hour, the remainder of workers about half as much, or $14 an hour. So they are agreeing that they are going to pay workers, it's twice the minimum wage, but this is, two-tier workers that begins to erode what the unions have fought for all of, for generations. So the question is, and this is what's going on, this is capitalist blackmail. This is, they're saying, you want jobs? You got to cut your wages. So what do you want? You want to have good union middle-class wages that that are fair for, a day's work? Or do you want us to go to Taiwan or Mexico or somewhere else like that? Well, we'll put the car together with people that are making $2 and $3 an hour. That's what it is. All right, let's get Chris from Taylor on the air. Chris, hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, bro? You all right?
Doing good. What's up?
How many years you been doing this?
No, oh, 2 or 3.
No, seriously.
I don't.
Seriously.
Long time.
Over 11, right?
Over 11, yeah.
Because I've been a Detroit police officer for 11 years.
And you've been listening.
On my way in on Sunday nights, I think it's very intriguing, some of the things that you have to say. I mean, I'm an open listener.
Well, great.
And I've worked in that rat cesspool city for 11 years. As a Detroit, I fight the war at home, I do.
Wow, man. That's
and it is a war.
That's pretty cold words about the city you're supposed to be serving.
I love that city. I hate what it's become.
Yeah. Is it getting better or worse?
And we got people that are trying. We got a new regime that Ralph Godby's a good chief.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Bing's a good man.
Yeah, the mayor. Yeah.
He's a good man.
Yeah.
He cares. Compared to what we had.
Yeah. Well, anything's better than that.
It was ridiculous. We were the laughing stock in the nation, and I hated it.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'd go out of town with my wife, we'd go down to Marco Island, you know, on vacation or something, and people would laugh at the city that we call home.
But what you wanted to talk about that yoga article too?
I think that was hilarious. That in the big scheme of life, who was that? Pat Robertson? Is that the CNN or the?
Pat Robertson in the past has criticized yoga, but
How could you criticize yoga? Someone trying to relax,
I know,
and get in tune with their body and get in tune with. Hey, it's the big earth we live on.
Yeah.
People are good, and there's good people and bad people. That's the only thing I've learned in 11 years being a Detroit cop.
That's true. Hey, what do you think about Detroit 187?
You know what? I'll sit and watch it, and I mean, some of the lingo they talk about, you can't put ketchup on a coney, and they're doing an interrogation. Can I get a soda in here?
Yeah.
Can I get a soda in here?
Right.
How about a pop? We do interrogations. We don't even let them have anything to drink for a while.
Remember why he did it, though? He threw it to him to see that he saw that he was left-handed, that the guy they were interrogating.
Yeah, that's kind of like stuff that happened in like Dragnet and stuff in the 50s.
Yeah, I know. I kind of gave up. I hate to say it, but I kind of gave up on it. I like seeing the Detroit scenes and all that, but.
The first couple episodes were filmed in Atlanta, weren't they?
Were they?
Yeah, the first one or two were filmed in Atlanta.
Wow. Well, they got a big audience here in the city.
They got a big audience, I think, on a whole. For ABC.
That's good.
I think it's doing pretty well.
Yeah. I can't brain around, what's the lead detective's name? Fitch? Isn't that what it is in Detroit 187?
Yeah, Fitch was the guy on Just Shoot Me. That was David Spade, too. I don't get it.
Yeah, well,
Cirioli, but
he strikes me.
He's Lewis Fitch, I believe.
Yeah, well, he seems like he's like a New Jersey cop, and he doesn't seem Detroit.
Pete, we're going to find out what happened in New York.
There you go.
What happened in New York?
Yeah.
They're already laying cliffhangers down and stuff.
Absolutely. All right, Chris, I got to take a break. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate you having me. Good luck. God bless everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. And we'll be right back. Let's see, got Johnson Taylor as well, some other people waiting. Also, open line 313-298-WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
"I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone."
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed, as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Jolene.
Hi, it's Peter minus Jolene. Jolene will be back next week. She was in L.A. for the opening of Jackass 3D. Well, coming up at 1 a.m., I'll be interviewing Tyree Guyton, who's the founder and artistic director of the Heidelberg Project, and also Janine Whitfield, the executive director. The Heidelberg Project is just almost indescribable. It says on my website, the Wild Cityscape Art Project that covers several blocks of inner city Detroit, and you can click on it and take a look at it. I've probably been there 20 times every time someone comes in town. In fact, let me see. I want a friend maybe even listening now. Hi, Leah, if you're listening. Taking her, my sister's coming in. We're going to take her there. But go to my website if you're interested. Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Go on the left side, a photograph of me and Jolene right below that, and it says click here for a look at it, and you can take a gander of this incredible project that is really becoming the pride of Detroit in terms of art. By the way, let's see, here we go. I got some emails. A number of them are pretty long, so I can't read them. Jolene's not here, and so I can't read them, do everything else I have to do. So I'll look at one of them has the name of a friend of mine. I thought, wow, my friend is listening. I thought usually he's a teacher, so he's got to go to bed pretty early. He usually doesn't listen. But I will read these and get back to you tomorrow. Although there was one we were talking about. This is from William, who wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, I've reached a point where it is really difficult to trust any politician. I say this because as a Dem all my life, and then look back to 2006 midterms, when the main cause of the Dems was to end the wars, yet they funded them. Another thing that troubles me is we have so many politicians in office for so damn long that they've lost touch with the people. I imagine it is to be expected once one is in the bubble for so many decades, yet how does that sort of power help anyone out here in the real world? People with a high degree of integrity, like William is expressing here, I could imagine not, I'm not saying you're going to do this or not do it, but I could imagine not voting. Think the hell with them. Whereas the teabaggers, they're like like I said earlier, they're like a dog on a bone. You know, they don't care how much corruption, their candidates are exposed and taking part of. You can tell them that these billionaires are funding their whole movement and they're just carrying water for these guys that don't want any regulations or any taxes on their multi-millions, and They don't care. They just go right ahead. All right, let's get back to our phone, 313-298-WRIF. And let's see, here is John. John's in Taylor, too. Here, John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How are you, Peter?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you made the comment about the GM plant and 40% of the workforce would be making $14 an hour. And one thing that I just wanted to say that I haven't seen reported in the media was the high turnover rate of those people. I guess that, you know, $14 an hour is just not enough for the hard work that that they have to do. And the turnover rate is exceptionally high.
That's interesting because these days, even $14 an hour, which translates into about $28,000 a year, I think people would hold on to that. You know, the much vaunted $5 a day that Henry Ford began paying back in the teens of the last century was because he couldn't hold workers at the pay he was giving them at the time. So maybe they need to think about, you know, jacking up the price a little. But they, you see, one of the things that these companies have to do, they have to make less money. They have to have less return on their investment, which is easy for me to say, but the whole stock market, pardon me, is such that, you know, if they started doing that or announced they weren't going to give as much return, their stock would probably collapse. So, again, this is just more capitalist blackmail.
It is, Peter.
Yeah. So,
anyway, thanks for the line. That's all.
Okay. All right. That's an interesting point, though. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you are on the air. Dennis in Detroit. Go ahead.
Yes, Peter. This is Darius.
Hi, Dennis.
Yes. Peter, you mentioned something about stock going up. It is all because the companies are right now buying their own stock. Big time. It has been, you know, I'm a progressive radio listener for a long time. And just like you, it's a fact that since beginning of the year, it's been fivefold companies buying their own stock back. They're sitting on over $1 trillion worth of money.
Well, they have these enormous cash reserves that that they are not investing in anything new, or certainly not in hiring people, and they're not even, you know, expanding their physical plant.
Yes.
Yeah, so they're putting it in the big crapshoot in the sky, the stock market.
So this is the reason why Barack Obama doesn't have any success in having unemployment, you know, dropping. It is just because the companies are just waiting for Republicans to just sweep the elections in November.
Mm-hmm.
And just blame it on Obama that he didn't do nothing. And the success is going to come with the Republican revolution.
Well, you know, to some extent, I would, I perversely would almost like to see this huge Republican sweep. Just, in fact, you know, if McCain and the half-term governor of Alaska would have actually won it all, and the reverse would have occurred. I mean, there would probably now be like a revolutionary movement. I mean, I got to believe, because things would have gone so far down the drain. And but it's a terrible thing to have to experiment with. All right, Dennis, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here is Victor in Ann Arbor. Hi, Victor. You're on the air. Hey, Victor. Victor? All right. Can you put him back? I'll put him on hold, and then you tell him what the deal is, Stephanie. Stephanie writes to me. I got to read my screen every once in a while. The pilot for Detroit 187 was filmed in Atlanta. The second one on were filmed in Detroit. All right. Here's Larry and Fraser. Larry, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete.
How you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I'm just curious why nobody's brought up the situation about the man down in Tennessee whose house caught on fire and the fireman didn't put it out because he didn't pay his $70 fee.
You know what? I heard some talk show people talking about it. I had no idea what that was all about. I must have missed it. What was the deal? Give us the background.
He lives outside the city limits in Tennessee City. So normally they give him a charge of $70 a year for use of the fire department and police department.
Yeah.
And he paid it for the last 4 or 5 years. This year, I guess he forgot to pay it. And lo and behold, his house caught on fire.
And then what happened?
He called the fire department. They checked with the fire chief who was golfing a mile down the road. And they checked that he didn't pay his bill. And they told him, well, they can't do nothing about it.
And his house burned?
And they said, well, the only reason the fire department came out, because the neighbors next door did pay their bill. So the fire department came out, and they hosed down the fence line so the other houses didn't catch on fire, but he let his house burn down.
This is astounding. Yeah.
And not that I watch some news channel, that I won't mention a name, but later on that evening, they actually told, they said, well, that's what he gets.
Wow.
That's what he gets. And they made fun of the man's southern drawl and the whole thing, and I found that repulsive.
Yeah, that's pretty offensive. Well, that's the free market. Why don't we turn everything over? We have the free market, the police. I think actually the police as an organized unit in the early 19th century actually was privatized. But so many of these things,
for somebody preaching on the Tea Party thing there about God and country, and I know their golden rule, but the other golden rule should apply to that, though.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I think I may have read, or maybe I didn't read this last week, but the Postal Service wanted to raise the cost of mailing a letter, again, by 2 cents. It was rejected, if you can imagine this. And it says the Postal Service lost almost $4 billion last year, and it's headed towards an approximate $7 billion loss this year. Well, they probably could deal with this a lot better if they would, who's like this big mailer? It's all this junk mail we get, where what's really dangerous about these mailing cost increases is what it dumps on small publications. Well, it doesn't matter whether you're on the right or the left. And but why should a post office have to make a profit? Why? I mean, you don't expect a school to make a profit. You don't expect the police to make a profit, right? I don't get all this.
It's a public service.
Yeah, it should be a public service. It's part of what the government's supposed to be. But I don't know. These right-wingers, they want to turn it over to a private firm. I'll bet you that would really work out well.
That'd drive the cost down, right? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, it never does. All right, Larry, thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF. You know, very frequently, Jolene and I are talking about offenses that are against the gay people. And why is this an element on our show? Well, I'll take that back. if you have a prejudiced mind, if you're prejudiced against people of a different color, a different religion, a different sexual orientation, if you have discriminatory attitudes towards women, for instance, you can't think straight about things that really matter. That diverts you. And generally, you get whipped up by people who have an agenda they're not telling you. They're going to whip you up against fill in the blank. So then you're not going to think about what's really key and fundamental. And what's key and fundamental? Our livelihoods, our family, our community, what have you. And if you're thinking about, oh, they are doing this and that, or they will blah, 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 well, you're probably not capable of really thinking creatively enough, let alone take part in an actual renewal of what's needed to make things right. And get this, and here's what the end of it all is: when you have these discriminatory statements by, for instance, in this country, by right-wingers who disvalue people because of something that they do in the privacy of their own home, or that they want to have the state sanction just like everybody else, which is none of anyone else's business whatsoever, here's what can happen. Well, actually, I'll start and get this. This is the small one. Seven young men in the Bronx have been arrested after the men made it their mission to find and attack two teenagers and a 30-year-old man they suspected of being gay. The young men who call themselves the Latin King Goonies, who range from 16 to 23, were rounded up Thursday and Friday after and charged in a series of attacks on the victims in an unoccupied apartment. They were lured into this apartment and then assaulted. I don't even want to begin. I was thinking about reading this just to horrify you, but it is pretty horrible what they did. Essentially tortured these men. That almost pales. Well, I don't know if people got hurt in this other thing, but in Belgrade, Serbia, Serbian riot police fought running battles on Sunday with hundreds of far right-wing supporters, these Christian extremists who hurled Molotov cocktails and stun grenades to try to disrupt a gay pride march in downtown Belgrade. Over 120 people were hurt. Nearly 190 people were arrested. Imagine that. Here are some men and women in this city that saying, we're proud of who we are. This is how we have developed in our lives. This is what our internal mechanism directed us to. We're loving people. We love people of the same sex. And we want to express that in terms of demanding our rights. And hundreds of far right-wing supporters who are hurling Molotov cocktails against people who are, well, you can't even tell they're different. Because what they're doing that these people, these horrid people, object to is being done in private. I mean, this is the ultimate in being a Budinsky, of getting into somebody else's lives where you have no right whatsoever. And you don't have any right to look at what someone else's personal dealings are with the political state. So if two men go and they want to get married or two women want to get married, it's none of your business. I mean, you can dislike it all you like. Who cares about that? I mean, I don't care whether, I suppose everybody prefers to be like. I mean, I don't care whether you like me or not, you like my opinions or not. It's up to you. But where it becomes troublesome, if you want to stop me from talking, right? If you want to make sure I don't get a job, if you want to hurt me like these guys did in the Bronx or this mob of crazed Christians. We always think, you know, Muslim mobs and all of that. I mean, got to believe they're not real sweet on gays either. Thousands of police officers. Can you imagine that? I forgot. Somewhere in this article, it tells how many people were in this group in the gay pride march. Not a tremendous amount. I mean, only a couple hundred or something like that. But anyway, it took thousands of police officers to seal off streets in a modern city to stop people from expressing love for one another. Well, I think it should be between all. I mean, none of your business. Get out of their business. Take care of your own business. Take care of your own sex life. Okay? That's what should be the important part here. They repeatedly clashed at several locations with riders, the cops did, who were trying to burst through security cordons. I mean, these people are crazed. I mean, when you got to do that? I mean, you imagine that? Can you imagine in this country, either a group of right-wingers or a group of left-wingers with Molotov cocktails and stun grenades attacking the police trying to get at somebody? Several parked cars were set on fire or damaged. Shop windows were broken. Garbage containers were overturned. Street signs destroyed. Several shops were looted. Oh, yeah, you might as well loot some stores while you're making your opinions known about gay people. The anti-gay rioters fired shots and threw Molotov cocktails at the headquarters of the ruling pro-Western Democratic Party, setting part of the building on fire, the state TV, on and on. And here, the protesters chanted death to homosexuals. How capable do you think these people are of thinking constructively of what needs to be done to put their country on a path that makes some sense once their minds are just filled with such hatred and death, calling for death of other people? They hurled bricks, stones, glass bottles, and stun grenades at riot police. Police responded by firing tear gas and deploying armored vehicles to disperse the charging protesters in the heart of the capitals, even after the brief pride march ended. And think about that, too. Think about this is your home. Think about the disruption of that city. Think about the way this appears to the world. And right-wing groups, gee, amazing, isn't it, that it's right-wing groups. Catholics, broke up, or Eastern Orthodox, I don't know which of these would be, broke up a gay march in 2001 and forced the cancellation of last year's parade. Belgrade Mayor Dragan Djilas said that the damage was estimated at $1,400,000. Right-wing groups say the gay events are contrary to Serbian family and religious values. Maybe they are, traditional ones. But, okay, so what? What are they doing to you? You know, you go about praying and marrying somebody of the opposite sex. It's nothing to do with you. Ain't nobody's business. But here, where is... Most of the rioters Sunday were young football fans, this soccer means, whose groups have been infiltrated by neo-Nazis and other extremist groups. Isn't that just sweet? So, the reason that it's so important to defend the rights... Well, I mean, you know what? It's important to defend the rights of everyone because everyone has the same rights. And no one has the right to be called less than a human being. No one has the right to be called by others less than human. No person, no matter what their choices are, as long as they're not hurting anybody else, has the right to be denied the same rights as everyone else. Because you think that because of their fill in the blank, don't deserve it. And just while we end with the kind of crazy people that are running for office, this U.S. Senate candidate, Sharon Engel told a crowd of supporters that the country needs to address a militant terrorist situation. Did you see this? And guess where she's talking about? Dearborn, Michigan, where she says Sharia law, that's religious law, dominates. Now, again, anybody that knows anybody in Dearborn, I mean, it's a heavily Muslim city, yet, guess what? It's still on the U.S. Constitution. Guess what? I'm going to say thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Jalene will be back next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Real Riff.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Ever see The Hangover? Well, that's nothing.
Oh, dear Lord!
101 WRIF is taking over the Vegas Strip for Halloween, and you're coming with us.
Is it awesome?
It's pretty awesome.
And Carlini, Meltdown, and Screamin' Scott will be your tour guides as they broadcast live poolside. Oh, God, we're all in trouble.
Nice!
3 nights of debauchery, hanging with Godsmack, 3 days Grace, Buck Cherry, and Browning Pool. Plus, a VIP-only poolside performance from Nickelback at Mandalay Bay.
I think it's safe to say that our luck has officially turned around, guys.
Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Unless, of course, it's broadcast live back to Detroit for all to hear, then you're on your own.
We don't have to tell everything. We can leave out the stuff about me marrying a hooker.
The Rift Sin City Takeover. Details at WRIF.com. Presented by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. And 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF. And WRIF. RIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, Detroit over the last decade, maybe even the last few decades, has gotten some bad publicity. They almost use it as a symbol of industrial wealth, rust belt deterioration, a crime and murder city and all that. But things are starting to turn around. Things are starting to turn around for real. And people are beginning to appreciate the real strengths and the real joys of the city that we live in. Most of us that live here know those. And some of them, we don't. With me today are two representatives of an incredible piece of Detroit, something that has been around for 24 years, but I'll bet you there's a lot of folks out there that don't know about the Heidelberg Project. It's, it's hard to describe. It's extraordinarily visual. It's a two-block-plus area full of the everyday discarded stuff of the world that's transformed magically into art and into symbols of so much. I'm having a little difficulty explaining this because it is so visual. And I think the people that could do it best are the founder of the project, of the Heidelberg Project, Tyree Guyton, who is the founder and artistic director, and with me also Janine Whitfield, who's the executive director. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you.
Yeah, and help me out here. The project is so visual, yet we have only our audio to describe it. Can you give me a description? What are we looking at here when we come to the Heidelberg Project?
Well, you're talking about two city blocks in the city of Detroit that has been transformed into something very whimsical, very colorful, very childlike. It's a magic land. It's a medicine. It's everything.
Okay. We should tell people where it is. It's if you come to the corner of Mac and Mount Elliott, and you turn right, and then people say, well, why is it called the Heidelberg Project? Is it named after something in Germany?
It's actually the street that it's located on. The Heidelberg Project is located on Heidelberg Street.
Yeah.
And in the early 1900s, it was a heavily populated German area, so you have a lot of the street names that are very similar. Arndt, Charlevoix, Benson, yeah.
So when you arrive there, so what is it, three blocks south, is it, Heidelberg, of Mount Elliott? Okay,
three blocks south. It's not Mount Elliott.
I'm sorry. Yeah, south. Yeah.
It is. It's actually three blocks south of Mac.
Mount Elliott. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're first greeted by this incredible sculpture by Lisa Rodriguez, right? That welcomes you. And that's a new addition, Tyree. Describe that, the welcoming gate.
Well, it's a project by Lisa, who is a student at Wayne State University. We saw the importance of inviting other artists to come and to become part of it. It's our way of saying our connecting the world, connecting the city with using people in order to do it.
Now, I think we need really a little more description because there's buildings that are painted. There's essentially what I would, at least in a formal sense, call installations. Tell us a little more what you find when you turn off of Mount Elliott onto Heidelberg. To me, it's jaw-dropping, and I've probably been there 20 times, and there's nobody that comes to Detroit that I don't bring there.
Well, let me say this first. It's something that I've been talking about as I travel all over the world now. What is art today? And I decided to venture off into space. It's my way of thinking outside of the box. So if you are coming over and you're on Mount Elliott and you make a right and you come down, you'll see this house that's been transformed, and it's a house covered with polka dots. Once again, what is art today? And then the trees has been decorated, and then the street itself has been transformed into a work of art. So it's this very colorful street.
There is. And tell us, for instance, about the boat filled with stuffed animals. How many? So there's a boat, what is it, about 14, 15 feet long, and it's filled with, what, hundreds of stuffed animals?
That's my interpretation of Noah's Ark.
And the interesting thing about it is that you can tie so much of what's been created on Heidelberg Street into actual statistics. For example, the fact that Noah's Ark was symbolizing safety, And the Heidelberg Project draws over 200,000 people annually, and it has become an ark of safety to many people in the heart of an urban community.
Now, you have neighbors there. What do the neighbors think about houses painted polka dots, assembled, this word's okay, right? I mean, junk, that was junk that has been transformed into something usable again. How do the neighbors feel?
Well, speaking of the neighbor, we over the 24 years that we've been there, it's been a very interesting getting the neighbors to come around, and I would have to say today that the neighbors are in support of the project. It's been there for 24 years, so but it took time. It took me educating the neighbors about art and involving the neighbors, getting them involved in this project. So the neighbors are in support of it.
So 24 years ago, you were a younger man, Tyree Guyton, than you are now. And so here was a man, let me see if I can do the math, like just 30 or 31, and suddenly you started telling neighbors whose house did you paint first with polka dots, yours or the neighbors?
Well, it was a house that was idled, that was next door adjacent to the house with the dots on it, and I went out there. That house was owned by city government at that time, and they gave me permission to use that house. But also, I want to say this here, the product has been around for 24 years, and I'm 26.
Okay, that's good. And the project itself, from a one-man undertaking, you, Tyree Guyton, of the Heidelberg Project, has now expanded incredibly. You have an office on Watson Street. Janine Whitfield is the executive director. Janine, tell us some. How has it expanded in terms of its educational functions and relationship to the rest of the art world?
That's a good question, Peter, because a lot of people ask us, well, you know, I see this kind of cool, whimsical, funky project in the heart of an urban community, but what do you guys really do? And so we are three things. We are art and education. That means that we're bringing art and educational programs into the public schools. And then we're also community development. We're looking now to expand and create a really cool, kind of a funky art center to take advantage, one, of the traffic that's coming into that area, so that's economic investment in the community, and two, to provide a place to work with children year-round, and three, to provide a type of artist-in-residence to invite other artists to come in and contribute to the community. We have grown tremendously, got three major grants this year. I'm very excited about that. And we are watching art and culture slowly become introduced to me, in my opinion, as a kind of a new industry in the city of Detroit.
And you have artists coming from all over the world. The Heidelberg Project is recognized as such. And Tyree Guyton, you're off to Switzerland soon?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are going to be leaving
soon.
Soon, the 26th of October. I was there in August, and so I'm going to go back over. I'm working on the big project there. The project in Switzerland is going to serve two purposes. It's an art exhibition, and also I am working on a portfolio for my dissertation. Last year I received an honorary doctor, a fine art degree from the College for Creative Studies, and so it's all important using it as putting it to work.
Yeah. Let's talk a little more again about the project itself. It's the Heidelberg Project. It's off of Mount Elliott, just south of Mack Avenue. And there may be some people listening that go, whoa, isn't that in the middle of a dangerous neighborhood? Well, you know how some people think. And there are some people from the far suburbs who say, yeah, I go to Detroit, which means they go to Hockey Town and the stadiums and that's it. Mm-hmm. And this is in an old neighborhood, as Janine Whitfield said, was the neighborhood goes back over 100 years. And now a lot of it is almost ready for farming, isn't it? In fact, there is some farming pretty close to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got in the Heidelberg Project community, you have it's so rich. That's an old community. That's where Berry Gordy got his start. It's a lot of history. A lot of people don't know that Helen Thomas, former White House correspondent, actually lived in the Polka Dot House. So although, that's right,
really?
Although it's a community that has been beaten down by poverty and unemployment and all of these things, it's also a very rich community, and it's part of old residential Black Bottom. The Heidelberg Project has been successful in bringing together people from all over the world, all over the state, and from nearly every region in Michigan. So it's building bridges, and it's funny how people are not there. The Heidelberg Project is such a jaw-dropping experience that people got to see it. They got to come. They got to see it. And what happens is you start this amazing, rich dialogue and dispel some of those fears that people have about coming to Detroit.
Yeah. Now, Tyree Guyton, it's always terrible to make assumptions about artists and their muse and what they see and all that. But as you said, some of it's magical, some of it's symbolic, some of it comes from where? How do you construct an individual? Let me think what I can. They're like the vacuum cleaners with the boot on it. I don't know if they were there the last time I was there, but you had all these upright vacuum cleaners with old galoshes on top of it, which struck me as like almost like the modernists of the first part of the 20th century. How does it pop out of your head?
Well, you know, I said earlier, what is art today? And taking it beyond and exploring new possibilities. It's my way of using a product as a medicine. I said that earlier. My job is to make people think beyond. And so sitting here and you are talking about those vacuum cleaners, taking them to another level, you know, helping people to see beyond, or helping them to see in general.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all of that, you know.
The only thing I feel we're missing here, and I suppose it can only be experienced when you go down to the Heidelberg Project, and the website is Heidelberg.org. Just Heidelberg.org,
mm-hmm.
Which is Heidelberg. So it's Heidelberg.org. There'll be a link on my site as well, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com. There's a good German name, Werbe, which means advertising in German. Although the Heidelberg Project has been celebrated both in our city and all or over the world, and Tyree Guyton is going off to Switzerland as a result of this project, you once had a very powerful nemesis that didn't agree with the artistic quality in the person of Mayor Coleman Young. Can you? That's probably a sad history, but maybe worth. That was when 1994. Am I
91?
Was yeah, 91. Was yeah, the first demolition.
He 91. Said, "This is all junk," and sent. And he actually sent out what? Tell us the story.
Well, in 1991, the city decided to demolish part of the project. But you know, if I sit here today and look back, that was the best thing that could happen to me.
Really,
the best thing.
Tell us.
Well, it helped to shape me. It made me the person that I am today, and I'm so excited that it happened. You know, that was a time I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't laugh about it, but today I can sit here and I can laugh about it. I can talk about it. I think in this life here, life has a way of shaping us and making us. That made me.
Sure. Well, tell us the story. So he said, this is rubbish, junk, all of this stuff. It's just a collection of what we used to call alley pick. Garbage and
yes,
and yeah. So we're bringing out the backhoes and
yeah,
and swept away how much of the project?
Oh, at that time they took away 80% of the project.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they took the project away, and I remember sitting there. It was on a Saturday. Never forget it. And all I could see, all I could think of was, you got to do it again. You got to do it again. And so I did it again, and you know, and the second time around was better than the first time.
The second
time around, because I had to do it again, and so I rebuilt the project. And then in 1993, Janine Woodrow came into the equation, and she talked about, let's structure this here. Let's give it a life, and let's build this project and make it better than before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to just add, Peter, that I think that, you know, it was a comment that this is what good art is about. It provokes. It disrupts. It causes people to scratch their head and think, it really demonstrates people's fears, because when they didn't understand it, they tore it down. And then it keeps having life beyond. Well, today, not only have the neighbors been educated and the medicine has gotten into the bloodstream, but so have the politicians. And if nothing more than to recognize the economic power behind the Heidelberg Project and what it can help do for this city.
Toby Gutton, did you ever speak directly to Mayor Coleman Young, who wrecked your project?
Oh, yeah, I had a chance to meet Mayor Young. Mayor Young came over to see the project. I met with him.
And
he signed the guest book, the same guest book I signed.
And what was the interchange?
Well, you know, at that time, the mayor didn't see it, you know, and my job was to educate the mayor. My job is to educate the world. And so in doing it again, I think that city government saw that I was determined. I was determined to prove a point that art, when everything else has failed, try art.
One of the hallmarks of the Heidelberg Project are polka dots. And, in fact, Tyree was nice enough to bring me one of the polka dots stickers. And you keep talking about Heidelberg Project as a two-block installation, but there's creep there. It's moving out, isn't it? I mean, do you have a grand plan for the city? Will it be a polka dot city one of these days?
If I had my way, absolutely. It's something that I said to council folks before. I told them that I was going to polka dot the whole city. Really made them nervous.
Well, then, yeah, they should be happy that you've only done several blocks. Let me not exclude Janine Whitfield from this, because as the executive director of the project, you coordinate a lot of the educational efforts, and you mentioned schools. So are you folks invited into schools to talk, or do you have your own facilities where people come in, or both?
Both. It's actually both, and I just want to say that to give an example of the strength of the educational programs that we put together, we are the subject of the Michigan Art Educators Association's conference this year that will be held in Dearborn.
Wow. Congratulations.
It's a pretty big deal. You've got over 700 art teachers from all over Michigan and parts of the Midwest, and their whole role is to demonstrate how important art is in the lives of our children, and without it, we're literally stunting their growth. So they're partnering with us to try and help push and drive that message. But we've developed lesson plans for children 3rd, 7th, and 11th grade, and these lesson plans are described to help children understand how art, environment, and community are all connected. And this is one of the things that Tyree often talks about, is that how art is really connecting us. So we're taking art to another level from an educational perspective.
So if there are teachers listening, they should contact the Heidelberg Project.
They could contact the Heidelberg Project, or they could visit the website for the Michigan Art Education Association.
Yeah, and again, that's heidelberg.org or my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And usually with the links for guests, I don't have any photographs ever. I never have, but I'll put one up this time. I'll have some of the photos that I took. I can't remember whether I said it before we were on the air or after, but everyone that comes to Detroit, I did say it on the air, gets a tour. So my sister's coming in town. She's going. we're going down there. Kind of mentioned this before, Tyree Guyton, that about the magical quality to it, but it also there's some aspects of it that are dead on serious, that have social and political commentary embedded in it. Am I correct?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Can you give us an example? I was thinking of a few, but maybe I let you give a couple.
Haiti piece.
Well, Janine just mentioned the Haiti.
We give tours of the Heidelberg Project, and that's what becomes the educational backbone, and people start to get it. And, you know, it's so funny, Peter, because Tyree creates the artwork. He has a thought process behind it. But then if you go back and you say, Tyree, talk to us about that piece. You know, it's like, well, what does it mean to you? For example, there is an oven that has shoes stuffed in, and it has become like an acknowledgement of the Jewish Holocaust. On the other hand, there is a tree with shoes coming down, and Tyree and his grandfather had a conversation about lynchings in the South, and he asked his grandfather if he could see the people, and he said he could see the souls. Mm. And the bottom of our shoes are called souls. But today it means that we're lifting up the souls of the community. So you see, those are the kinds of messages that are embedded in the artwork. And then the one that's most powerful to me is the new White House. Tyree literally transformed the polka dot house from the small dots into larger dots, and I think you should talk about how you involve people from all over the world in that project.
Well, Janine is talking about the house that's covered with dots. last year at the Kresge Foundation. I was one of the recipients of a fellowship from the Kresge Foundation, and they gave me the money to redo the house. I saw the importance of using folks in the community, and then when we had visitors to come to see the project, I had them to make dots on the house, and the visitor who came to make the dots on the house are people from all over the world. It's my way of connecting the world.
That's amazing. I mean, art should do that, and it has the capacity. People have to listen to it, and you can kind of ignore smaller pieces of art. You cannot ignore the Heidelberg project once you're immersed in it. And that's interesting what you said. We were talking earlier that when you turn into the Heidelberg project, and there's this boat, like a 14, 15-foot boat piled with hundreds of little animals. Someone once along the line, you said it was Noah's Ark, someone once, well, let me put it this way. You look at everything looks whimsical at first and has sort of this surrealist nature to it. But like you said, Janine, about the oven and the shoes, somewhere along the line, someone once described that boat as slave ship.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, has it ever, or does that, again, just when you say, what does it mean to you? But then it goes from whimsical teddy bears all piled up to this historic memory of something really terrible.
Yeah, that's very interesting, Peter, you should say that. There was another guy in the neighborhood. I said to him, I said, yeah, take a look and tell me, what do you see? And he said, and this guy had a few drinks, and he said, you know, I'm looking at the boat, and he said, wow, that boat is really interesting. I said, well, what would you call it? And he said, I think I want to call it checking out the scene with the gangster lean. So you hear some of everything, but it's my way of using art as a medicine, getting people to come and to look at it and to share with me what they think.
Yeah. Now, if people want to connect up with the Heidelberg Project, either, well, let's start just with visitors. I mean, there's just hop on down there, right? I mean, there's is there better times to come than others, like for like tours? Or I've just kind of just went down there.
There's many ways to visit the Heidelberg Project. You can visit on your own. We've got just a couple rules that we ask people to please respect. You know, you are still entering in a community, and yes, people do still live in the houses. When we leave here today, Tyree, actually, we have a scheduled tour. We have groups that they actually schedule tours. We have trained docents that actually will walk you through a narrated tour of the site, and then it ends with a Q&A with Tyree Guyton, and it's usually, we've only done them through word of mouth, but just to give you an indication, we've done record tours this year. And we do charge a fee for these narrated tours. It is how we continue to do our work. So you can contact our office and schedule a tour, or you can always do your own walking tour.
You know, it's very interesting. As I said, my sister's coming to visit soon, and I was going to take her down there, and I would probably just have them down. But, you know, one of the things you think you're familiar with art, or you're familiar with what you're looking at, but a docent, someone that can really explain a little deeper into it. So I'm gonna take you up on your offer to do the guided tour. In a way, it almost, and it shows you my non-artistic mind, it almost looks like where can you go from here? I mean, it's so big. There's so many aspects to it. It covers a couple blocks plus. Does it have a finality to it, or is it always being added to? I think maybe not. You were being a little facetious when you were saying you're going to polka dot the whole city. But will the Heidelberg Project ever be completed?
No, it's kind of like life. Life is every day you're learning something new. And I see the same thing with art. You can always go back and do it in another way, or you can add to it, or you can take away from it. And life is just like that. So today, as I sit here talking with you, I would just have to say no. But I think Janine wanted to add something to that.
Well, you know, look, hey, I'm structure. I'm about organization. And it's important. You know, we don't want our artists to have to be restricted to start thinking about confinement. That's my job. So I will tell you that we are building an art center on Heidelberg Street.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we are taking it to new levels. Tyree is absolutely correct. It does continue to evolve, but we're taking it to a new level in that we are going to build an art center. And guess what? It's going to be made from found materials. We are not talking about, you know, putting some new fancy shiny building in that community. What we're talking about is exploring the concept of found and recycled materials in a way that becomes functional. And that's very exciting. Very, because we're going to use the people right in the community to build the darn thing.
Hey, Jenny, I need to mention, too, that we are working with the U of D Mercy, Wayne State University, College for Creative Studies, and
University of Michigan.
And University of Michigan. I saw the importance of teaming up with these institutions that could help us to take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. And so Janine is talking about this penny center that we are going to create right there in the heart of that neighborhood, heart of the city.
Well, this is talk about the heart of the city. I mean, you guys are, and I just want to recommend to everyone listening to get down there, check out the Heidelberg Project. You go to heidelberg.org. It's HEIDELBERG.org. And I'll have a little photograph or so of ones I've taken down there. And teachers, you heard the invitation. There's ways that you can hook up with that. And you guys are fantastic. Thank you for doing so much for Detroit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Join Ann Carlini and the Riff Rack Girl Marissa tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Lady Jane's Haircuts for Men on the corner of 12 Mile and John R. in Madison Heights. Stop by and register to win a 2011 Chevy Camaro, courtesy of Matthew Hargrave's Chevrolet in Royal Oak. Plus, get a great haircut for just $10.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
101, The Riff.
101, WRIF.
The Riff.
Hi, this is Mark Smyth from Creed.
Everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad. This is Chris.
This is Brian from Cabo.
And you've got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Play ball! Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball. No. Instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Peter Werby here with you. Thank you very much for joining me. Yeah, I saw a book that the title of which startled me, which is great for an author and great for an author trying to get across ideas. And the name of the book is Sexism in America, Alive, Well, and Ruining Our Future. Now, I remember just a little while ago, my wife and I saw Up in the Air with George Clooney, and there's a young, maybe even early 20s, a company executive. And at one point in the film, she says to an older woman that Clooney is kind of hanging out with, well, we appreciate everything your generation did for us. In other words, that feminism in beginning in the 60s and certainly through the 70s and the 80s just redefined American society, our attitudes towards women, both women themselves and men, and men began to get an understanding of what was expected of us. Suddenly, different genders were everywhere, from the police to the fire to politicians to newscasters and what have you. So deal done, all over. We brought another group of people previously excluded from American democracy inside. End of story. Barbara J. Berg says no. The book is Sexism in America, Alive, Well, and Ruining Our Future. That's very critical. And Barbara J. Berg is the author of The Crisis of the Working Mother, also Nothing to Cry About, and also The Remembered Gate Origins of American Feminism. So she can talk about... Well, just what the title says. She has taught at Sarah Lawrence College, Yale Medical School, Columbia University's physicians and surgeons, and written for any number of publications. She's appeared on the CBS Morning Show, CNN, and Oprah. She lives in New York City. We're reaching her there. It's a pleasure to welcome Barbara J. Berg. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks so much, Peter. And I loved your introduction. I loved your talking in Bad Up in the Air, which is a movie that we all saw actually New Year's Eve, along with some friends, and noted that comment. The comment that the young woman makes that you alluded to is something actually that I encountered quite a bit when I was doing research for the book. I remember telling one of my colleagues a terrible, terrible story of a woman who was literally dragged up 36 metal steps by her then husband, and scarred, and you know, scarred emotionally as well as physically, spent time in the hospital. And I was telling him this about in terms of the uptick in domestic violence in this country, and he looked at me and he said, "Sexism? Are you kidding me, Barbara? There is no more sexism in this country. You are so yesterday." And in fact, some people did feel that way until I began to talk a little bit about my findings. You know, like you, perhaps, like many of your audience, I too believed that we were in a post-feminist society. That's certainly what we've heard, a done deal. And I began to do research, and I discovered that there were lots and lots of things that didn't quite jive with that notion. For example, before the most recent election of 2008, one in four school children thought it was illegal for a woman to be president of the United States. We can go on, of course. What is post-feminist about a society where pregnant women across the country are routinely getting fired from their jobs, and they don't even know that it's against the law to be fired? The law simply is not being enforced. Or a society in which a major chain store featured an ad of an adolescent girl with her legs spread open over a bullseye on the target, and when several groups protested and said, you know, listen, this is the last thing we need with rape statistics going up and so much hypersexualization of our young people, they didn't see anything wrong with it. Or what is post-feminist about a society where the subprime mortgage debacle heavily, heavily fell on older women, single women, poor women, and women of color, all of whom, according to a recent study by Anita Hill, who now is a professor at Brandeis University, all of whom were charged higher rates than men across the board, and men who had comparable economic status of these women, or a society where, I don't know if you have children, I have children, where the movies that we think are safest for our little ones, G-rated movies, male characters dominate 75% of the roles and 85% of the speaking parts. Or a society where, and this was something that really shocked me, Peter, for the first time since 1918, women, we are dying at younger ages than our mother's generation.
Mm.
our life expectancy is literally dropping in America. So these are some of the, you know, I could go on.
Well, let me...
Maybe you want to talk about some of these things.
Yeah, I do. But let me pose it more general terms. I mean, we've come to grips with any number of excluded groups in this society. I mean, beginning 60 years ago with the Civil Rights Movement and through the women's movement, the gay movement, other, as I said, I mean, the revolution of 1776 was not all-inclusive, and we've had to struggle greatly to bring more and more groups into that. And when they are successful, I mean, nobody would argue, I hope not, that racism has disappeared or that racial discrimination has disappeared, yet there's a black president. No, I think that people may say...
Wonderful point.
Yeah, people may say that, sure, you're talking about these, it's still a non-perfect world, but we see women everywhere. I have a women's supervisor, a woman EMS came when I broke my arm and all of that. And so, I mean, are we talking about still problems around the edges, or do you think that this is alive and well, the subtitle of your book, that it's still like issues of monumental importance?
I think the latter.
Okay.
Issues of monumental importance. And certainly, and it's very intriguing that you began that way about Obama, because that is often what I will say when people will point to Hillary Clinton, her candidacy, Sarah Palin, number two spot on the Republican ticket, as great signs of progress. And then I'll say exactly what you said. Hey, but look at Obama. You certainly wouldn't argue that we have solved the problems of racism and racial discrimination and poverty out of proportion, disproportionate among people of color in this country. Now, I want to just mention this. I've done a huge amount of research, but don't just take my word for it. There is something called the Gender Global Index, which looks at almost 200 countries worldwide that hold 90% of the world's population. And every year, they rate these countries on how well they are achieving gender equality. The United States ranks in the 2009, which of course is the latest year that they don't have anything yet for the beginnings of this year, we rank 31st in the world in gender equality. So this is pretty serious. We are behind Cuba. We're behind Lithuania. We're behind the Philippines, as well as all the Western nations.
Who's number one? That's what.
This past year it was Finland. The year before it was Sweden. The Scandinavian countries do very, very well.
On my talk show, my on-air partner and I, we go back, remember the thing during the 80s when you say USA, number one, number one. Well, we would have chant here, USA, number 34, number 34.
Right. And, you know, where we've lost significantly, when it's really lowered our score, are two categories where I thought we would do quite well in. One is the representation of women in government. We are, even after the 2008 election, we are 54th in the world. And I think it's easy to understand why women don't want to run for office in this country and why they're reluctant to, when you see the kind of demeaning and humiliating and comments that they are subjected to. And I'm not just talking about Hillary Clinton. Sarah Palin has certainly been subjected to a lot of very, very sexist comments going her way. And it's Nancy Pelosi, all that talk about, she's a shrew, how many facelifts has she gotten? And, you know, even Condoleezza Rice, when she was going to Germany, a reporter for the Washington Post, I don't remember what she was wearing that day, but evidently she was wearing a long coat and high-heeled boots, and the reporter kept saying, she looks so sexy, like a dominatrix. I mean, really? And, you know, this is a ploy, unfortunately, Peter, that is used oftentimes by people in the media to demean women by talking about their appearance rather than talking about their substantive arguments, their qualifications. The other area that we've done really, really poorly in is health and survival. We are 34th in the world there.
Oh.
And, you know, this is something that's interesting when we hear that we have the best healthcare system in the world. It simply isn't true. women are dying across the country from a host of treatable illnesses, diabetes, stroke, heart disease, tuberculosis, cancers. We've seen cutbacks in research for breast cancer and in ovarian cancer, which is a very serious form of cancer for women. The National Law Center issued a report card in which they evaluated every state in the union and how well each state was trying to meet or working to meet initiatives put out by the health and hospital strategies for us to meet by 2012. Not one state in the union received a passing grade, received a satisfactory grade, not one state in the union. We have, I've been saying we're 37th in the world in infant mortality. I've just seen a figure that puts us at 41st in the world in infant mortality. So we're doing very, very poorly in health and survival.
Yeah, it is disgraceful. Barbara J. Berg is my guest. She's written Sexism in America, Alive, Well, and Ruining Our Future. It's published by Lawrence Hill Books. You can go to Barbara's website. It's barbarajberg.com. Very important to put the J in there. It'll also be linked to my website, peterwerby.com. You know, when you strip away prejudices, the attitudes that people have, and you look at it, the raw discrimination that causes these maladies, and here we're talking about how they affect women, but when you look at other groups that have been historically excluded, particularly African Americans, we're really talking about a manner in which income is disproportionately apportioned, because women get less because they have these characteristics such that, or that African Americans or Hispanic Americans are get less because they have these characteristics that are defined in prejudicial terms. But ultimately, it's about discrimination and lower wages, which allows more for the dominant group, us white guys, right?
And I think you're making an excellent point, and I think a lot of times people don't realize the huge economic disparities. For example, women routinely are charged, and maybe if there is any health reform left, maybe this will address it. Women routinely have been charged hundreds of dollars more for their health insurance policies than men. And yet we know that the majority of women in this country, and I do want to get back to what you said about we see women all over the place, woman supervisor and so on, and I'll address that in a moment, but the majority of women in this country do work in pink collar jobs where they have less autonomy, less control over their work lives, and less control over their domestic lives as well. But we all suffer, when I say all women suffer from the gender pay gap. And it used to be, oh yeah, well we know women make less because, you know, they're taking all this time off to take care of their kids and take care of their elderly parents and, you know, they're not really serious workers. The Association of American University Women issued a comprehensive study last year looking at 11 years to do, in which they found that gender pay gap, that stubborn gender pay gap, starts actually right out of college and only increases over the course of a lifetime, so that women are already starting out less when, you know, except for somebody who might have had a baby right out of college, taking time off is hardly a factor. Most women are working full-time along with men. And studies have shown that over the course of a lifetime, a woman working full-time makes, on average, $700,000 less than her male counterpart. And I am talking about Caucasian women here. For women of color, the gap is much, much larger. And when you talk about discrimination and prejudice, I mean, you know, one thing that is so intriguing to me, that here we are in 2010, and women are still not routinely included in medical clinical trials. The model is still you guys out there. Yeah. You know, it's not women and it's not minorities either. And I say this is tremendously important because women actually present with symptoms that are very, very different from men's in a variety of diseases, cancers, HIV, AIDS, and this is something that when I talk to audiences, many of them, male and female, are surprised. Women are actually, in this country, dying. Well, let me put it this way. More women than men in America die of heart attacks. And this is a study produced by the American Heart Association. It's available online. And only 8% of primary care doctors across the country know that and know the symptoms of heart attacks in women, know what to look for. And I had a very dear friend, thank goodness her husband was late for work, and he found her. She was collapsed on the bedroom floor, and this was after her talking to her doctor for 2 weeks about symptoms, and he absolutely kept telling her it was stress, and this poor woman ended up with a triple bypass in the cardiac ICU. She's fine today, and even afterwards, presented with all that had happened, he said, well, you know, Paula, your symptoms just weren't typical. Well, yeah, they were typical for a woman, but not for a man. So these are all ways, you know, talking about the dominant person in this society, this is where it kind of hurts us that we are not considered yet equal partners.
Well, the bulwark in any society and for equal representation of all groups, when we have groups that are excluded or discriminated against, is the dominant group.
Okay.
And since the beginning of this country, which was launched by white propertied males, and they're the only ones who could vote, and they held all the property, including holding other people as property, and they always have been, we always have been the group that have been the most resistant towards that. And that is because if you start allowing unpropertied males, if you start allowing African Americans, if you start allowing women into the economic pool, that's more competition for already scarce wealth. But the subtitle of your book, Barbara J. Berg, is Alive, well, I should have to say the whole thing, don't I? Sexism in America, Alive, Well, and Ruining Our Future. You could say, hey, the country ran just swell when we had just white propertied male, and the struggle to include everybody has just created huge amounts of social chaos, confusion, strife, and what have you. Maybe we should just let the rich white guys run everything.
Well, you know I'm not going to let you get away with that, Peter.
Of
course, and I my sense just hearing you speak is that you really don't want me to. Look,
yeah.
It is morally inappropriate, it is ethically inappropriate, it is socially inappropriate, and it is economically inappropriate to be depriving a whole category of people from their full human rights and from fulfilling their fullest potential. Now, you talked a little bit about the workplace, and so let's just go back to that, because I know it's very, very typical and common for us to look around and say, wow, you know, women are in the workplace today, and I just want to make sure that we all understand this. I mean, and everyone who's listening to us knows, I'm certainly not saying there hasn't been progress. I mean, we are not back in the 1950s yet, you know, what I call the dark ages, when a girl was zipped into that little pink blanket sleeper, her future was pretty much mapped out. I mean, we have certainly, certainly seen great numbers of changes. Let's look at my field. I'm an academic. And there are lots and lots of women who teach on college campuses. And yet, if you run the numbers a little closely, you'll see that we make up 50% of the instructors and 50% of the junior faculty. We are still only 27% of tenured faculty at four-year colleges across the country. Now, I'm going to go back to the American Association of University Women did a study, and it's called Tenure Denied. Why aren't women getting tenure? And they came across what they called the new wild card in these discussions, lack of congeniality. Women aren't getting tenure, they say, because we're not congenial. So what does this mean? You know, well, this means that women, listen, none of us mind, I should say most women I don't think would mind, I surely don't, getting coffee, you know, occasionally, being the one to bring in the cookies for the faculty meetings, taking notes occasionally. But when it was only the women or always the women being asked to do this, they balked. They didn't see their job as being subservient to the men who never were doing this. So, hence, not congenial.
But aren't the guys in academia now a little, they're not quite as clueless as the fathers were?
Of course. I mean, we have made progress, but still we're only 27% of tenured faculty. So explain this. When you look at something like Fortune 500 companies, you'll see the same thing. Women are 50% of managers and professionals, 2.3% of the CEOs. I've interviewed women architect once said something very funny, which stuck in my mind. She said, you know, Barbara, she said, you'd really begin to think that something akin to the Bermuda Triangle effect is happening to women in my field. We're all there in the junior levels, junior partners, but when it gets to advancing, women are disappearing. They're just not at the tops. Photographers, dancers, musicians. I mean, it is literally across the board. And as you said at the start of the program, there was a great deal of social change in the 1960s, 1970s. We have been in the pipeline a long time. We should be seeing the effects. And look, our country, like many, many countries around the world, is obviously, and I'm sure your listeners know this as well as we do here in New York, we are suffering hard economic times. It simply doesn't make sense to deprive our economy of the brain power, the smarts, the energy, the perseverance, and the talent of more than one half of the population. This, if ever there was an all-hands-on-deck moment, our country is going through this, and we need everyone to participate. And it just is, it just makes no sense economically. You know, when you talk to people who work in global resources and global development, they will tell you putting money in the hands of women is the best place to put it, quite apart from the fact that we can't balance budget, checkbooks, and all the stereotypical things that are said about us. When money is put in the hands of women, that money goes to feed the family and go for education.
We only have about 3 minutes left, and we may be able to get to some other topics because your book, Sexism in America, is just filled with an enormous amount of information and historical accounts and what have you. Very important, I would say, not just for women to read, but obviously for men as well. But let's go to remedial steps. I mean, we have the laws in place. We supposedly by custom, people are aware that they shouldn't have a workforce that is 100% men, even if it's police, even if it's construction workers, even if it's military. I mean, certainly, and in some places there's actually the striving to have a diverse workforce on every level. So what more can be done? I mean, are we just in the area of custom and individual prejudice, or is there social policy? Are there laws? Are there regulations? What can be done here?
Well, I think what happened was we've lost a lot of rights even starting from the 1980s, but I think, and we haven't really gotten into the political piece of this, but in my book I certainly talk about how the terrorist attacks, the war in Afghanistan and in Iraq, our then tarnished image abroad, have fueled a certain ethos of masculinity in this country, which has kind of pushed women's issues a little bit under the table. So now women need to, what I say often is, let's know our rights, let's know what's on the book. The truth will make us free, so they tell us, and I hope that it makes us fighting mad. Now, what should we do? I mean, there's much that we can do. We can start urging to invest in a green economy, because women will be wonderful in this, and women will lend their voices to this. We must, and this is not just good for women, it's good for our whole country, we must invest more in schools and in libraries and in teachers. With schools across the country, I'm sure you're seeing it in Detroit, we're seeing it in New York, and, you know, I am a teacher, and this is so dear to my heart, are being closed. This is, if we're going to do anything to change this country to one that's more equitable and beneficial to all Americans, we must invest in our young people, and we can do this only by changing some of the dynamics, some of where this money is going, and putting it back into education. This is absolutely crucial. I say the good news today, in the day of the computer and the internet, is a lot of people who want to be activists but don't want to leave their house can do it just at the computer. They can subscribe to Women's E-News, to the Women's Media Center, subscribe to the Feminist Majority Now, and ask for newsletters. As my kids say to me, Mom, if you could figure out how to do it, anybody can do it. You know,
okay.
Go to the alerts and get this information. Find the course that's dear to your heart. Maybe it's going to be healthcare. Maybe it's going to be domestic violence, which is on the uptake. Maybe it's going to be gender equality in the workplace, lack of discrimination against people of color or people who are gay or lesbians or transgender youth. Whatever your issue is, you can find it there, and they will then direct you to what to do. Go to your kids' schools and make sure that they're talking about women. Make sure that they're included in the curriculum. March is coming up, Women's History Month. Is your daughter and son or son's school celebrating it? Do they talk about women scientists, women mathematicians? Go to your local house of worship. Maybe there's something that can be done there, an evening where people can talk about gender equality, or your bookstores, your community centers. Let hospitals hold women's health days so that we can become aware of some of the issues that, women are facing. Women, write to your congresspeople. They want to hear from you. Lobby. Run for office. There's nothing women can't do if we set our mind to it. You know,
that's an amazing list.
I hope everyone was taking notes.
Well, I mean, let me just say this to men and to women and men. If you do nothing, everything will remain as it is. Well, we're completely out of time. There's so much more in Barbara J. Berg's book, Sexism in America, Alive and Well and Ruining Our Future. If you want to go to Barbara's website, it's Barbara J. Berg. Important to put the middle initial. Barbara J. Berg is one word, .com. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Barbara, thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you, Peter. It was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My dad is a firefighter, but the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Betsy, look at these sweaters. They look amazing on our girls.
Maybe.
Come on, what's wrong?
Suzanne, I have no business being in the store. I should not be shopping. Things are really tight. We're behind on our mortgage.
Listen, Bill and I had the same problem, and we got some really great counseling, and it was free. I'm going to email you the information.
If you even think you may be in danger of foreclosure, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org. Public service from the NFCC.
WRIS Rockstar Halloween Party. Friday, October 22nd at the Radisson Livonia. Great prizes for sexiest, scariest, and $500 cash for best overall costume. Full details at WRIF.com. From Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go. And 101 WRIF, The Riff. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Yeah.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Except for herpes. That will come back with you.
The Rift's Sin City Takeover. Details at WRIF.com. From 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.